Okay, I'd like to welcome everybody to the June 18, 2020 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. It's nice to have all of those heres without any delays. So if you would stand, tonight we're going to start with a moment of silence for Melanie Behrens, who is a past board member, and Don Pierzes, who was a past district employee. So we'll start with the moment of silence and then remain standing.
Yeah, let me add
yes.
Wayne Honaker.
Oh,
to that.
Wayne
just passed away yesterday.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Thank you. Our thoughts and prayers are with their families, and we thank them for their service to the district. So now we can have to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And tonight, before we move into our agenda, I just thought, since we've just said the Pledge of Allegiance, we talked about liberty and justice for all, so I thought this was a good time to share a community statement that was developed in collaboration with a variety of government entities and also some other public school districts here in Union County. And I know we'll have more conversation later in the meeting, but I just thought it would be nice to start our meeting with this. So as a community and as a nation, many of us are hurting right now. The racially motivated injustices and crimes that are continuing to occur across the nation are extremely hard to comprehend and to witness. This time of tragedy comes in the middle of a global pandemic that is adding suffering and keeping us apart. Now is the time to talk to each other with kindness, caring, and understanding, and to treat each other with fairness and respect. We ask every resident and every employee in Union County to think carefully about how we treat one another. In this time of protests and national unrest, we need to listen, learn, reform, and support one another. It is important for us as adults to set an example for our children by embracing inclusionary practices in our community. We believe our differences make us unique, but compassion, inclusion, and patience will unite us as a community. The Union County Commissioners, the City of Marysville, North Union Local School District, Marysville Schools, Dublin City Schools, Jonathan Alder Schools, and Fairbanks Schools commit to inclusionary practices and to building tolerance, trust, and decency within our community. So thank you for your work on developing this statement. And with that, we can move on to a motion to adopt our agenda for tonight.
So
moved. Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, we have a couple of presentations. And actually, I mean, we normally do this Good Apple in April, at our April meeting, I believe. And so we're sorry that we can't do it in person, but hopefully we'll see them later next year.
Double click on this one?
Yep.
Okay, so we put together a video for all of you, and our staff recognized each Good Apple. So I'd be remiss if I didn't thank everyone who, as you know, our list of volunteers continues to grow every month, even when we're not in session. So.
Thank you for having us here to the June 18th board meeting.
Edgewood Elementary would love to recognize Miss Mary Davis for its 2019-2020 Good Apple Award. Mary has been just instrumental in working with our staff and students at Edgewood, and we're all very familiar with Mary, and we all just love her to death, but I thought in the best interest of Mary and her relationship with Beth, we would have Miss Beth Lambert introduce Mary.
It's been wonderful knowing Mary over the years and the dedication to our school and our community. I'd like to read the submission that I made for Good Apple Award that we made for Mary Davis. It is my pleasure to nominate Mary Davis for the Good Apple Award. Mary served our district well with her expertise and leadership during her years as a teacher and instructional coach. After retirement, she returned as a volunteer to continue to support our students and our teachers. We honor Mary's commitment to our district and our students with this nomination for the Good Apple Award. Mary volunteers her time at Edgewood and at Raymond Elementary Schools. She has been coming to our school about once a week for several months this school year. She works with small groups of second grade students to help them achieve their goals in mathematics, both in problem solving and math fluency. She makes learning fun for students by playing games. She builds connections. She treats them with respect. She listens to them attentively. They know she cares, and they often ask when she's going to be coming again. Mary also helps teachers, and she continues, even after retirement, to help teachers with resources to use in their classroom. She lets them know how much they are appreciated. She always has a smile for everyone and wants you to know that she and her family are doing well and how your family is doing. She gives helpful advice for working with students in the classroom. Mary always develops positive relationships wherever she goes. When you speak to her, you know she's listening, and she's here to help both students and teachers in any way that she can. She continues to give a tremendous amount of support to our school, our students, and our community, even after retirement. We are so thankful for Mary and the time she gives.
Thank you, Mary. Congratulations. Well deserved.
Hi, my name is Amy McGlynn, and I am here to talk about Mrs. Lorraine Baker, our Good Apple Award winner for the 2019-20 school year. Under my principalship, Lorraine has been an active member of the Mill Valley family for my 6 years, however, 10 years as her 4 children have been through Mill Valley, Philip, Rachel, Katie, and Ben. Ben's last year happens to be this year as he heads to Creekview. Throughout the 10 years, Lorraine has been involved in many PTO events and classroom activities. She has involved not only many community partnerships, but also brought opportunities for the students at Mill Valley. Even when she is not officially signed up for a PTO job, Lorraine ends up helping out in some capacity because we can count on her. Recently, she even encouraged her older children to also volunteer and participate. Of course, their young energy was greatly appreciated. Not only has she participated in recent events over the years, but she also served as a district level the very first time we redistricted under my principalship. She has again chaired the last several years of STEAM Night alongside with her husband, Steve Baker. Her knowledge of local businesses and the resources she was able to get proved to be valuable in gaining community involvement. Her organizational skills have helped us for many, many, many years. The students have benefited. Lorraine is always available when I need her, when our school needed her, whether her children were involved or not. Many thanks to Lorraine. You know, her sense of humor, dedication, compassion are definitely parts of her that make us appreciate her immeasurably. Mill Valley will miss Lorraine. Congratulations. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Lynette Lewis, the principal at Navin Elementary, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to introduce Will and Kristen Whitaker, our Good Apple Award winners for the 2019-2020 school year. Will and Kristen have 2 children, Lily, who is a rising third grader, and Kaysen, who will be in kindergarten at Navin in the fall. Both Will and Kristen are so involved in all of our school activities. If you ever need anything, they're the first ones to volunteer. Will has been PTO treasurer for the last year or two, and Kristen is very involved as well. Both are always volunteering for school activities, fundraisers for PTO. They've even been known to put on a few costumes to make our kids smile, which those costumes are awful. So again, thank you so much. Kristen said that her parents were very involved in her school and her community, and that inspired her to do the same thing with her children, hoping that they too will be inspired in the future to become active members of their community. So again, we want to thank Will and Kristen Whitaker so much. They have done a multitude of things for our students, staff, and our school. And they are our Good Apple Award winners for 2019-2020. Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Karen Wells, and I'm the principal at Northwood Elementary School. It is my pleasure to introduce Danette McKinney as our Good Apple Award winner this year. Danette has four children, one at Bunsell, one goes to Creekview, one at Northwood, and then an incoming kindergartner for next year. I met Danette when I first came to Northwood, and I've always found her to be extremely supportive of staff and students here. She has served as a PTO president for the last 2 years, and during that time, she has been involved in a variety of activities and so many things, I can't even list them all right now. I look forward to Danette continuing to be an active member of our Northwood family, and I want to thank her for everything she's done for us to this point. It's a pleasure to work with Danette, and I hope others have that privilege as well. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carol Lentz, principal at Raymond Elementary. Raymond Elementary is proud to recognize Mrs. Debbie Case as our Good Apple Volunteer for the 2019-2020 school year. Mrs. Case is recognized for her countless volunteer hours she has given over the past few years. Debbie is always willing to support our teachers with various tasks, including helping students with math facts, reading with students, or preparing materials. But it's really so much more. In addition to these tasks, she always has a smiling face and words of encouragement for those who need that. When Mrs. Case comes in, our students know that they're going to be met with her bubbly personality and a safe place to chat and learn. As one teacher told me, Debbie's help and support in my classroom last year was exactly what I needed during my first year of teaching. She never failed to put a smile on the students' faces and brighten all of our days. Raymond Elementary is so fortunate to have such a dedicated, loving, and caring volunteer. We cannot thank Debbie enough, and we're really proud to recognize her as the Raymond Good Apple Volunteer of the Year. Congratulations, Debbie.
I'm proud to recognize Linda Perkins as the Creekview Intermediate 2019-2020 Good Apple Award winner. Linda was our PTO president over the course of the year and provided great leadership. We rely heavily on volunteers to operate our school and to fill some of the critical gaps that we have, especially with funding student initiatives. Linda was PTO president and really a unifying force in the opportunities that we've created for our students, our staff, and our families. Linda's a great supporter of our school district and a great supporter of our community. Special thanks to all the work you've done, Linda. Thanks so much and congratulations.
Hi, my name is Michelle Koffenbarger and I'm the principal at Bunsell Middle School. I would like to announce this year's Good Apple Award winner for Bunsell Middle School for the 2019-2020 school year is Susan Huffman. Susan Huffman has been a member of our community for a number of years. She's been an active volunteer for various Bunsell Middle School activities for the last 3 years. This past year, Susan became an integral part of our Mini Swingers show choir. She not only designed and built the entire Mini Swingers set, she also brought it to every performance and organized a team in order to help her set it up and tear it down. Getting volunteers to help with anything can be a difficult task, and Susan was up for it and made that happen. Another great thing she has done is use her talents as a photographer. She took professional photos of the mini swingers at no charge to parents and shared them with the entire group. She also did this for the cast of the musical. She has provided access to both the mini swingers pictures as well as musical pictures to our yearbook staff. Susan also went out of her way to take care of cross-country photos and tennis photos for our yearbook the last few years. This was a huge help and enabled our yearbook staff to create great pages for those activities. Susan's late husband, Josh, was one of our founding coaches of the BMS girls tennis team. In his honor, Susan set up a scholarship to provide private lessons to an outstanding BMS tennis team member. She handles all the fundraising events in order to raise money for this scholarship. This includes collecting donations, running a raffle, and operating an auction of the items collected. Susan also attends our fall BMS pep rally to present this scholarship to the lucky recipient. Susan currently teaches art for Dublin Kaufman High School, as well as owns Susanna Holly Photography. Her daughter Mallory is an eighth grader at BMS, and her daughter Haley is a freshman at MECHS. I'd like to congratulate Susan Huffman on being Bunsell Middle School's 2019-2020 Good Apple Award winner.
It's my honor this evening to present the 2019-2020 Apple Award to Lisa Rhodes for Marysville STEM Early College High School. Lisa is the parent of 2019 graduate Maya Rhodes, and in spite of the fact that her daughters went on to college, she still continued to serve and lead in our community. In the spring, when things went haywire for all of our students, and our seniors essentially had to miss out on many of the last memories that they would have had as a student in Marysville schools, Lisa started the Adopt a Senior program through Facebook that led to about 75% of our graduating class in all schools, all three, to be adopted. Parents, families, community members adopted them, brought them their favorite snacks, things that had meaning, and basically showed them a lot of love and celebrated them on a deeper level at a time where we really needed that. So congratulations. Thank you, Lisa Rhodes, for your leadership.
Hello, my name is Thomas Cochran, and I have the honor of serving as the principal of Marysville High School. Tonight, I have the distinct pleasure of naming the MHS Good Apple Award winner for 2020. That person is Pam Klaus. Pam Klaus was named for her unwavering support of our Marysville schools, MHS, and our performing arts program throughout the district. She has dedicated many years to the Coral Booster program, and she is now serving as the president of the Coral Booster program. She has had an impact on thousands of students throughout that time. She has also had three kids go through the Marysville schools, and ultimately, she has always been a champion for our students. She has always been there to volunteer whenever we needed anyone to help in any capacity. I've worked with her for years on the interview committees. I've worked with her for years on the show choir showcase committee. And really, she is a parent who steps up to the plate before you have to call her. A perfect example of that is during all of the COVID-19 and the social distancing and everything that the class of 2020 in our schools had to deal with, Pam Klaus immediately said, "How can I help? How can I make a difference so we can make sure that our students are having the experiences and the memories and doing the best that we can in this situation?" She is one of those parents that just steps up to the plate every single time. She will say, "Let me call some people, let me organize some parents, and make sure that we're doing what we can do to help you and to support you." She is truly one of the great ones. She is stepping down as the Coral Booster president, and she will be missed because of what she has brought to the schools and to that program. She is really one of those parents that looks out for everybody. Through our time with our interview committees, you can just see it in her heart that she cares about kids, she cares about our schools, and she loves this community. So Pam, thank you. I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but you are an ultimate asset to this school, to this school district, and to the community. So thank you, Pam Klaus, the 2020 Good Apple Award winner from Marysville High School.
When it came time for the staff of Tri Academy to pick a Good Apple Award recipient, it really was a no-brainer. We were instantly unified in our decision, and that decision was Steve Devine. I can't imagine last year without him. Steve was just a reliable and steadfast support, a mentor, a friend, a cheerleader for all that we did at Tri.
Steve, I want to thank you for always being willing to engage with our kids and always make them laugh. Thank you.
Steve, thank you for supporting our kids.
Steve, thanks for everything you've done for our kids this year. You've been a great role model and a great mentor, and you've shown them respect and how to respect people. You've given them something that they don't get outside of TRI. Thank you.
Thank you so much for driving all of our wonderful boys to our field trips this year. I am so thankful, and the vote is in. You are the best van driver in the city of Marysville, so thank you.
We want to say thank you for the day that you brought in the Super Bowl ring and the donuts for the kids, and the kids all really had a good time with that, and I think some of the teachers enjoyed it too. So we just want to say thank you for all your help.
You approach everyone with the deepest of respect, and for that I'm incredibly grateful. Thank you, Steve Devine, for all that you've done for our Tri Academy.
First, I want to thank everyone who takes time to volunteer and help with our students throughout the school year. We couldn't do our work without you, so thank you for being kind and generous with your time to help our students. Next, I'd like to recognize the Board of Education's Good Apple for this year, and that award goes to Ryan Piper and the Union County Daily Digital. Ryan and his team at the Union County Daily Digital have been so focused on creating a positive vibe in the community and covering special circumstances with students, but in this last couple months, he's really come through as a champion, coming together and supporting our senior class by paying for the banner, an individual banner to go out for each student who was graduating this year, was just above and beyond. So wanted to thank Ryan and his team once again. I know it was not an easy feat, but you did a great job and helped us honor our senior class in a very special way.
I think that deserves a round of applause. Yeah, that's
really just, do have some amazing people in our
community. We do.
Yes.
I know. And it was just, I found it interesting to starting out with Mary Davis. And, you know, I mean, I think anybody who's had kids go through the schools knows Mary Davis. She's kind of been here forever. She's still volunteering and making a difference. But, yeah, all those names. I just wish they were here. You know, it's kind of hard to watch that and not be able to personally thank them all, but if they're watching, we definitely share our gratitude and appreciation for everything that they've done for our district and kids and community. So, okay, are we ready for our next presentation?
Yes, so I asked an instructional team to put together, while we can't describe the format of which we're going to return to school, we can talk about our instructional focus and our social-emotional focus. So there's two presentations that are separated on those topics. So the first one is about our instructional approach, reminding us that we're still going to do what we do as far as personalized learning, choice, all of those elements. And the second one, I asked Mark to give you an overview of the year because this is really our first year of being focused on implementing the social-emotional standards. Mm-hmm. And while that was cut short, we still were able to accomplish quite a bit. And then how we wanted to launch next year, knowing that students have been somewhat disconnected from direct contact with the schools and life has changed for them. So you're going to see two presentations.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Ashley Thompson, and I'm the Personalized Learning Director at Marysville Schools, and I just wanted to take a moment to sort of kick off what our MEVSD instructional plan is for the 2021 school year. We felt it was important to respond to the many shifts we went through in the 1920 school year due to coronavirus. As we prepared for implementation next year of our best practices. So just to give you an overview of what our tier one response is at the core level, I wanted to sort of highlight these five areas, and I'm collaborating with Steve Griffin and Chris Campbell to address how we might respond to learning deficits that occurred in the 1920 school year, as well as how we're going to be ready to shift on a dime in the future should we need to work in a blended model or a fully remote model again. So just to sort of be clear, we're sticking to our personalized learning vision. That means our instruction is standards-based and really anchored to what we call the Marysville Guarantee, which are those priority critical learning standards that teachers work together to identify. We're still living in a mastery learning framework, and we had to really examine not only how that adapts in different learning modalities, but also how we need to address screening. In order to do that, we have to know where kids are, and that required a steep dive into how do we flexibly and reliably assess student learning. Systematic supports is another tenet of our personalized learning vision, and we really needed to think about how are we going to respond to learners at the Tier 2 and Tier 3 level in any of the learning modalities we might face for the 2021 school year, which could be, you know, the more traditional face-to-face setting, a blended setting, or a fully remote setting. And most importantly, how do we make sure that we are encouraging a sense of wellness, especially in the lens of social emotional health? How do we make sure students are determining agency through those non-academic skills, such as our habits of mind? Mark Gallagher is going to provide a deep look at what our plan is moving forward district-wide, and I feel really encouraged that we are living on the cutting edge of how can we infuse social-emotional wellness into the structure and fabric of our Tier 1 core instruction, as well as our Tier 2 and Tier 3 supports. This is just a new glance at what used to be our learner agency pillars of personalized learning, in which we respond with a learner-centered approach at the classroom level. And because we've worked on this for 4 years, as we engage in classroom walkthroughs, as we engage in conversations with teachers and principals and kids, we're in a fluid model where these things are all working together. So I felt this image of the circular kind of in-motion wheel is more representative of where we are now, which was really exciting. We're encouraging students to use their civil voices and share their ideas. We want to promote a culture of learning, but also a culture of empathy. We're promoting choices for kids, and we're allowing for variance in learning pathways to those targets on the learning continuum. We're allowing and exploring different ways to encourage kids to express mastery, which is a direct tie-in to our assessment practices. Kids know how to access help in classrooms. They know routines, they know expectations, and more importantly, they know how to use their voice to co-construct what a healthy learning culture can be in their classroom and learning environment. We're getting better at knowing our learners and the whole child. We use PLPs, and we're teaching kids to set goals and focus on their own progress toward not only the future of acquiring mastery of critical learning standards, but also what does that mean for your future and what kind of platform can we help partner with so that you can have as many experiences as possible preparing for the future. I also want to talk about design for learning, because I think that's where we were most stretched last year as we flipped into a remote learning model very quickly. And we have to think through the lens of access, accessing learning and instruction, accessing our teachers, engagement with learning, and then expression of learning. And how do we get really good at flexibly collecting formative feedback flexibly collecting formative data in order to give students really personalized feedback so they can make the next steps in their learning cycles. So I'm really proud of the work the district has done, and we certainly would not be able to pull off remote learning the way that we did had learners not had this experience of developing agency. So I really want to congratulate our teachers and our schools for doing such good work prior to this uncertain time. Certainly there were challenges that we faced and that we want to learn from during our remote learning time last spring. As I mentioned a moment ago, we have to think through access, engagement, and expression of learning and how that looks from a distance. Some of the challenges we faced were how do we get kids access? How do we streamline what that looks like? How do we make sure we're partnering and communicating in ways that's very clear? How do we provide timely feedback? How do we give teachers modalities to do that? How do we make sure that our grading practices are equitable when access could be variable? So that's a huge question that we've had to really think through. And last spring we worked on engagement and engagement with learning, and we modified our grading practices. As we move into the 2021 school year, we want to get as close to mastery learning grading practices as possible. How do we identify and respond to learning gaps when learners are in front of us and when learners are not in front of us? So Steve Griffin's going to talk about that in his part of the presentation today. How are we going to encourage teachers and students to advance learners when they're ready at their own pace? So how do we embed extension opportunities into a modality of learning that's not always traditional, but could be blended and that could be remote? How do we provide interventions to students with unique and significant needs? Kim Jude and Christian Jones worked with intervention specialists and reading specialists to have as many connections with kids through not only tier 3 instruction, but also through therapies and things like that. And their connectedness through the remote learning was profound. And I think it's something that we need to be proud of and continue encouraging our teachers to do. How do we develop safe, meaningful relationships if school looks different next year? And how do we support social emotional wellness, which Mark's going to talk to at length? Similarly, we had challenges with our staff. As our district vision is anchored to innovation, collaboration, and inspiration, we were definitely innovative when we were challenged to be more innovative than we've ever been. But we also wanted to make sure they felt supported in that innovation. You know, what tools could we provide for our teachers to feel successful as they take new risks in instruction? Furthermore, how do we promote a culture of collaboration when we're so far apart? And how do we continue to be inspired to reach toward the vision and maximize the actualization of that vision? So first of all, as we look towards standards-based instruction, we had to come back to the learning continuum. This is a document that we had done a lot of work on, poured many hours in, and very grateful for that because it promoted clarity and it promoted a sense of unity even when we were far apart. So I have to suggest that the research we used to build that continuum was immense, but here are 3 books that we studied as a district leadership team to sort of drive not only how we built the continuum itself, but then how we implemented the use of the continuum. And just to give you an overview of how this came to be and why I think it was a powerful tool when we flipped into remote model, it was collaborative, so certified teaching teams worked together to prioritize these learning standards. And Heather McLaughlin, our personalized learning coordinator, spent countless amount of hours putting it into a teacher guide, which talks about how learning or how mastery learning is calculated, how critical learning targets and critical standards work with sub-targets and learning progressions. So if you ever are in buildings and you want to see a teacher guide, We hope to publish these sooner on the website, but take a look because it's been a profound amount of work and it was incredibly unifying as teachers have sort of a crystal clear vision of not only what's critical, but how mastery can be articulated toward that target. Then Chris Campbell took the learning guides and the standards, the sub-targets, and put them into our SIS, which allowed for teachers to tag standards and give kids standards-based feedback. That was a game changer. It allowed for parents to have transparency to why assignments were given, why activities were given, because they could see the standards-based alignment. And that was something that was usually just housed in the minds of the teachers and in the plans of the teachers. So using Unified Classroom and using PowerSchool to sort of publicize that connection is huge. And then lastly, our instructional coach team has put countless hours around just continuing to polish what the Marysville guarantee is, continuing to polish the sub skills that might be necessary as students embark on their trajectory toward mastery. And they walk side by side with teachers through TBTs, either in buildings or on Zoom when we were in buildings, to make sure that everybody has the support that they need in order to make this learning continuum accessible to kids. So I can't thank this group of people enough, and there were others who certainly contributed, but these were the workhorses of the process, and I'm really grateful for the work that they've done. Once we had the learning continuum established, our ability to live in a mastery learning model was exponentially influenced. And when we think of mastery, sometimes we make the mistake of only thinking of mastery grading. But really what the core of mastery is how does it look during learning? How do you have a mastery-infused instructional cycle that is intertwined with standards-based targets? So if you take a moment and look at the acronym here, you can see that this is where the personalization comes in, because not every student acquires mastery in the same time with the same tasks and, you know, in the same format. So this really encourages, I guess, teachers to be really flexible in how they determine mastery and how they engage in that learning cycle for students. How do they plan for support when students don't get there? And how do they plan for extension when students might already be there? How do we flexibly assess? Because not all kids do well in the same mode of assessment. And then when they get formative feedback where students aren't there yet, how do you embrace that power of yet? And how do you encourage kids to have a growth mindset and keep trying again? So these attributes are really about what does instruction look like in a mastery model, which then helps lead to what grading can look like in a mastery model. Obviously, our scale is something that we've used for a few years now in K-6, and it's working its way up through K-12. The early college has used it for several years as it was built upon this foundation. But we just want to make sure mastery is the goal and the feedback is aligned to, you know, are you there yet? Are you approaching mastery? And what does a did not attempt look like where kids and teachers haven't really engaged with enough evidence to determine mastery at this time? So this is something that's still getting polished and still getting used. We stuck to a standards-based grade card and had to pivot in the third trimester due to COVID and really talk about what engagement looked like. But this will be something that we continue to stick to because mastery learning brings a mindset to the table of there's a commitment to the learning, not necessarily a one-time seminar opportunity to see what we get. So we will stick to our mastery learning proficiency scale. And the research behind some of this is here. I have to emphasize Grading for Equity by Jill Feldman because it was a book that really identified the philosophy behind mastery and the why behind why it's so important for student development and learning. It's really difficult to do mastery if you haven't thought through and worked through flexible, reliable assessment. This is the work that we're in right now, and our teachers are doing a good job of thinking through how can we assess, when can we assess, why do we assess? And the main purpose of assessment is really formative until it's summative. So as we work with teachers, we really want to be able to answer the question, how do we know when they know? And then the next question is, what do we do about it? So in order to examine how we know when kids know, we have to approach assessment in a formative way until kids get there. So mastery is the commitment that we will give you every reasonable opportunity to acquire and demonstrate the knowledge that you need and the skills that are listed in our learning continuum. In order to do that, we had to think through flexible types of assessment. So not only what does a traditional assessment look like, but what might a digital assessment look like so you can have really formative and immediate data? What's a vendor-approved assessment, which is normed against other populations of developmentally typical students? What does a performance assessment look like if a more traditional style isn't necessarily the modality that fits the kid? Can you have a conversation with students to talk about their learning? Are there other ways to assess? And really what the thread through all assessment is how do we make sure that we're asking kids to show their learning at a depth of knowledge that aligns to what the standard calls for? So sometimes we live in a world where we're asking kids to just recall information. But in competency-based learning, we really want kids to work toward that DOK3 of strategic thinking because they're applying it to their wider world, and you're actually activating habits of mind to a greater degree when you're asking kids to think strategically, to perform, to say why, and to make those broader connections. So assessment had to really not only be flexible in the style of assessment, but also we have to get really good at understanding how to stretch kids toward deeper thinking. In a moment, Chris Campbell is going to talk about how we bring this all together so that we can be flexible not only in the classroom where kids are in schools, but also in a hybrid model where we might see kids part of the time, and in a remote learning model. So our plans with admin teams over the summer have been, how do we make sure we streamline the tools that we have? How do we make sure we understand how to use the tools that we have? And how do we make sure that we continue to maximize the most important resource in the room, which is the teacher, and get kids' engagement with the teacher in reasonable ways? So we're working through plans and commitments that we can say, here's why, here's how you can access learning, here's why we use this tool, and here's what you can do when you need support. So this is something that we're doing with the principal teams this summer in hopes to have a reference sheet ready for families come August. Steve Griffin's going to talk about deeply what does systematic support look like, not only in response to what happened in the spring, but also going forward and how our MTSS model is impacted, and really something we can rely upon because we have such historic data built in the culture of our schools. And lastly, Mark's going to talk about social-emotional learning. He's going to talk about how we're going to bring to life our habits of mind in our feedback cycles for kids and how we're really going to promote wellness because these are trying times and these are uncertain times. And we want to make sure that, first and foremost, our kids are okay, our kids are supported, and teachers have the tools to do that. So I look forward to continuing to press forward toward personalized learning to make sure that these five tenets, as well as the development of learner agency, continues to be our focus and continues to be what we research and what we talk about and what we grow toward. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Next up will be Chris Campbell to talk about how we're bringing our core instruction together to be ready to really act in any framework for the 2021 school year.
Hi, my name is Chris Campbell. I'm the Instructional Innovation Director for the district, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit just about what our core instruction may look like next school year. I want to start off a little bit with just a blended learning background and just kind of show what that's going to look like and what we can do with our tools we have in place. With going remote this past spring, we learned a lot of good things about what we have in the district, what we can do for our students. One of the things that really becomes important is that blended learning component of instruction. So I wanted just to give a quick background on what that looks like. When we talk about blended learning, we talk about not just putting kids on a digital platform and walking away. And even remote learning is not blended learning. Blended learning is when you have that brick and mortar experience, that face-to-face learning, and then with that you blend in that online digital component, whether that be teacher-created content or whether that would be an actual digital product that we purchase in the district. I find it to be extremely valuable for teachers in the classroom to really be able to take the data from their blended or digital component and personalize learning for all students. That can be powerful for the students and powerful for the educator. It allows for differentiation and it allows for personalization of learning for all students. When I look at blended learning, when I talk about blended learning, I talk about being a vehicle of personalization and how it can help personalize learning. And at all times, it's important to know that the blended learning platform, whatever that may be, that blended learning platform is only there to support the teacher. The teacher is always the most important part of that equation. And they need to know how to use that tool appropriately and how to use that tool effectively to meet the needs of the students and to make sure that it's valuable and it's a value in the classroom. So with that in mind, I'm going to look at four different ways that we're going to help and support the next school year for 2021. We're going to look at prepare, equip, train, and support. The prepared part has actually began early in the COVID experience. We really started looking at what we were doing well, talking to teachers, talking to parents. We created some surveys that we sent out to parents, staff, and even some of our students. And one of the things we learned is that we did some things really, really well. One of those things being communication. Parents felt that teachers were very communicative. They supported their children, and they felt that they were in step with what needed to be going on in the classroom. Some things we could do better, we learned, was that we need to be a little bit more consistent with our digital products and how we were having students access learning. And so with that in mind, we've kind of taken that feedback, and we're going to do some things around help support our teachers and equip them so that we can keep the main thing. That's really important. We want to make sure that we don't lose our way when we're going any sort of, whether it be traditional school, whether it be a hybrid model school, or whether it be a remote learning experience. So making sure that consistency is there will allow that communication piece to continue to be strong and also make it a little bit more clear for the learners. So with that in mind, we created this remote learning plan. Here's a sample of what that is, and it's broken into three components. One is the access to learning, which is our learning management system. The other would be how we are going to engage with the learning, which is our digital tools and programs. And then finally, how we're going to express the learning, whether our assessment pieces that we can use to express what we've learned. And part of that, in going in there, you can notice on here that we talked about Zoom on there a couple points. And that, like I said earlier, was a really important part of the experience for our students. And the feedback on that was that it was very helpful and it made the students feel that they were still part of the classroom. We do want to be more consistent with that, though. So this product here, or this plan, allows teachers to basically tell parents, these are the things we're going to use in the classroom. These are the things the school is going to use. And this is how you access them from home. And I get a lot of questions about that all the time. You know, how from parents, from teachers, from administrators, you know, how can we access one of our programs from home? And part of that goes through our single sign-on process, which goes through the SIS. And so we want to make sure that the programs that we're using are, as often as they can be, going to be a single sign-on that we work with the IT department to make sure that it's going through our student information system. And so here's just a quick example of one of the things that we're going to provide for parents and students if we have to go remote. This would be fine even if we don't go remote. This is still a great tool to have at home. So parents can, when we have snow days, when we have any sort of days that kids can't be in school, this allows for them to access, and this gives them a quick one-stop shop where they can find that information. The next part is really equipping our teachers. Okay, how do we equip the teachers with tools that can maximize the consistency? And part of that is going to be the learning management system. We have we're a power school district, so we own Unified Classroom. And we also, Power School recently purchased Schoology. So now we have both Unified Classroom, Class Pages, and we have Schoology. And so what we're going to do to make it more consistent, because we heard that, last year we had our Phase 1 buildings switch over to Unified Classroom using Class Pages. Next year, Phase 2 will implement, and we're going to implement all K through 8 will use Class Pages as their learning management system. That'll be, it's a very clear, concise, easy-to-use product that's great, especially at the K-4 level. And with that in mind, we'll continue to use that at ECHS. They used Class Pages last year. They transferred the content over because they were Phase 1 of our rollout. But we're going to allow MHS to continue Schoology so that they've already have their content in there and they will not have to switch over to a new learning management system. So the consistency across the board will be, most buildings will be using Class Pages, and then just MHS will continue to use Schoology because they already have a lot of content built in that platform. Finally, the next part is going to be our digital assessment and our digital tools that we use. And really providing the digital assessment and the training, equipping them with that is going to be important. We have three different digital assessments in the district that we use, and we purchased a new one this year as our third one. So we have Unified Classroom assessments that we already own. We have Schoology assessments that we own. And then we purchased GoFormative, which is another flexible piece. Because if we have to go remote, then it's really going to be important that we can assess students flexibly and we can assess students remotely, and that's going to be a tool that teachers have at their disposal to use. And then again, the digital connections would be our products that we already own, how to make sure we're using those the right way, making sure teachers understand which ones they have available to them, and how they can use them to maximize instruction in the classroom. To make sure that all works, we have to do training. The training has actually started the last couple of years. We've done blended learning training for grade 7 on up. We've had about 40 or so teachers enrolled in a professional development over the last couple of years, working to create content, working to look at how a blended learning classroom works. It's a little bit easier often in the lower grades to do a blended classroom. And so the need was at the upper levels, how can we really help teachers and support them to create blended content in their classroom? To continue with that, we offered a summer institute course on blended learning, flipping your classroom, and also on using the LMS Class Pages, so teachers who have not had an opportunity and they wanted to join that could get in and they could actually work with that. We'll continue that professional development in the fall as we work with teachers to work on their Class Pages, to work with blended learning and how they can run their classroom more easily. Training them through the communication process, making sure that ongoing communication is occurring as we work with the teachers, and giving them that opportunity to communicate through Zoom, communicate through other digital products, so their students are learning in different modalities. The other really important part of all of this, I believe the most important part, is really an intentional allocation of time and resources for teachers, letting them have time to create their own content, build that content in the learning management system is going to be critical for them, and we're going to provide that for them, that training time. We've heard loud and clear that teachers really prefer to make their own content. That doesn't mean they can't use content from a digital platform or even share content, and I'll talk about that in the next piece here. But for those who want to make their own content, they're going to have that opportunity, and we're not going to force them to use other people's content because they like to personalize. And I completely understand as a former teacher, I like to make my own content as well, and I like to be the owner of that. So with that in mind, one thing we can do, though, to support teachers is we can do that collaboration piece, which is really the LMS allows for that. It allows us to provide them, teachers, the opportunity to go to a bank, a library, if you will, of learning management content. And they can go in there and they can borrow from other teachers and they can make it their own. They can take it and then they can either use what's there, or they can take it and then they can adapt it and they can make it their own. What that allows for us, too, is that we can use the coaches in support of this as well. If we have a teacher who's really struggling making content or needs support making content, we can use the coaches in the district and other teachers and really provide content in those Class Pages that a teacher can then go and just take for themselves. And then they can, as they get more comfortable, they can implement it and they can change and adapt it to their needs. finally, the last thing we need to do is support. And the support is ongoing throughout the year. It was ongoing last year. We'll continue it this year. And if we've learned from this, and what we've spent a lot of time doing is creating these flexible learning modules to support teachers going forward, so they don't have to be face-to-face in front of us, but we have modules we've created that we can send out, push out via email, and say, okay, if you need support, here's a video that's 3 minutes long that teaches you how to do this. Here's a video that maybe 20 minutes long that teaches you how to do this. Or here's an overview of the whole product. And we have that with our LMS, we have that with our grading system, we have that with our personalized learning and mastery grading, what that looks like. And we'll continue to develop those over time, working with the coaches. Obviously, collaborating with IT is going to be important to make sure that the product we're using, and then we continue to make sure that we're vetting quality products for our students. Using that instructional coach support, like I said before, we can use the coaches to help build some of these modules, but really making sure that they're supporting teachers, whether that be zooming in with them to help, or making sure that they have the instructional resources that they need. And finally, just making sure that we continually work through feedback cycles, and we're listening to what the teachers need, what they're struggling with, and how we can meet those needs for them. Overall, like I said earlier, I think this is a real opportunity. I think that we have a lot of great resources in the district already, and we have a lot of teachers who are really good at that, really good at this kind of digital blended style instruction. We have some teachers who are new to it, and so I think the opportunity here is to make sure we're supporting our teachers and letting them know the products we have that are available to them, and giving them the proper training and support they need to really initiate those in the classroom, so that our students are having that innovative experience, and it's really going to be a next level of personalization for us. Again, thank you for your time, and have a good evening.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Steve Griffin, and I'm proud to be the literacy director for the district. I want to thank the board for the opportunity to share some specific information regarding our district response and planning in the Tier 2 intervention space for students this coming school year. I think Ashley in their introduction did a nice job of providing an overview of our core instructional planning. But as we think about our Tier 2 response to the changes brought upon the school district from COVID-19, I'd like to briefly discuss a few targeted things. First, I want to take a look at the typicality of summer slide, implications that summer slide and COVID-19 will have on our multi-tiered systems of support moving forward into the school year this fall, what the beginning of the year expectations will look like. I think that we're going to have to respond differently to a student need, not only academically, but from a social emotional standpoint as well, and I know that Mark is going to cover that this evening with you. And since I am the literacy director, I do want to talk about literacy instruction and interventions and how COVID-19 is going to change a little bit how we have to do business. So let's start with this occurrence called summer slide and really examine the typicality of what skills regression has historically looked like in our student population in schools. The bar graph on the left side of your screen represents the end of year performance of all students grades 2 through 8 who took the iReady reading diagnostic. So approximately covers 2,500 plus students, and their performance on the overall reading measure is represented here in both 2018-19 end of the year assessment, which is labeled DX3, and then the subsequent fall assessment at the start of the year labeled 1920 DX1. Let me orient you to the graphs just a little bit. So blue is students who scored above grade level. The green bands are at grade level. Yellow bands represent students who scored 1 grade level below on the iReady reading diagnostic, and red would encompass students who scored 2 or more grade levels below. By looking at the data, typically our summer skill regression in overall reading score is about 20%. In other words, from the end of one school year to the start of another, we lose 20% statistically from blue and green bands, which from a percentage standpoint then show up in our yellow and red bands. Interestingly enough, the 20% is typically over 3 years been evenly split between red and yellow. So from the end of 1 year to the start of next, we gain in yellow and red about 10% more kids. Now, I know that I only showed you one school year here, but when I examined this exact data over 3 years, it's been consistently around 20% and a growth of 10% in yellow and red for the past three summers. We've known about this for a few years now, and it's one of the reasons a year ago the district moved away from traditional summer school models to a more targeted and far-reaching summer reading book exchange program. We wanted to simply try to head this off and get to more kids with a smarter, personalized system aligned to what we know about summer reading skill regression in kids. So we developed that program and plan to continue to develop it. That's a quick overview of, you know, is summer slide real in our district? That's what it looks like. About math, math, interestingly enough, has actually been worse. Over the 3 years, instead of the 20% like we've had in reading, it's been more of a 30% slide. And again, this is the iReady math diagnostic data that you're looking at. I attribute this increase over reading to a lack of any resemblance of like summer math programs, and why families, you know, in the summer they'll tend to engage in some literacy activities such as like nighttime readings before bed. I've really yet to hear of anything resembling in the summer like a before bed math fact challenge or anything like that. So I think that explains why the increase in math.
Sounds like fun.
And before I move on, I would just like to point out to Diane and Jonathan that their literacy director just discussed math in a board presentation. So that's one for the record books. So when we look at summer skill regression, now we're dealing with something I like to call now the COVID-19 slide. The good news is that we don't have to guess on what the COVID-19 impact will have. The NWEA, which is a nonprofit organization that provides assessment and professional development services to public schools, in April of this year, they published a brief projecting what schools could expect. They used a measure called MAP, which is a tool that's very similar to iReady. They're cut out of the same cloth. And I want to walk us through some of the preliminary estimates that their brief gave us to give us some insight on the potential impacts of the extended pauses of academic instruction during the coronavirus crisis. NWEA leveraged research on summer loss, and then their sample's a lot larger than ours, which was 2,500 students. Their sample is over 5 million students get on the MAP scores in grades 3 through 8. So let's take a look here at this information so we can wrap our heads around what we might be dealing with in the fall with the COVID-19 slide. We'll start with reading. Let me orient you to the graph. In the graph, you see three different types of growth trajectories by grade. The solid line at the top is your typical growth trajectory from the last day of school compared to projections under two different scenarios for the closures of COVID-19. The first scenario is what they call a COVID-19 slowdown, and that's the dotted line that has larger dashes. And then you have the COVID-19 slide, which is the small dotted lines. Again, these trajectories are specific to grade band levels, but in general, what we saw is we should expect at least an additional 10 to 20% slide in reading over the number I provided earlier. When we look at math, it's even more so in math, but we should expect an additional 20 to 30% slide due to COVID-19 interruptions. I would put these projections at worst case scenarios, not taking into account our remote learning impact from mid-April to late May that we put in place in Marysville. I'll be sure to share this brief with Diane so everyone can take a closer look at the data. I for one, found this data to be extremely helpful in planning. For example, summer slide clearly impacts, which surprised me, students in grades 3 through 5 more than it did to grades 6 through 8. Those are huge learning years in math and reading for students. And by looking at this data, it helps me with resource planning and allocation right from the jump when we return to school. So from a tier two perspective, how do we respond to the COVID-19 slide? As school leaders, you know, without question, we have a moral imperative to provide some resources and support for students and families after the interruption we've experienced, especially when I think we're going to continue to face interruptions to our typical school models. So how do we respond? I think intentionally and strategically, to put it bluntly, and to me this means data. We're going to need data more than ever to guide curriculum and instructional supports, especially so we can target the resources and pay attention to students and families that have most been impacted by COVID-19. The goal is, simply put, we need to make up for lost time. But in doing that, we need to do it responsibly. If academic expectations are unrealistic, you know, school's likely going to become a source of further distress for students at a time when they need us most for additional support. So that's a lot of concerning news. I would say bad news, actually. But as we move forward, there is some good news. First and foremost, in Marysville, we're no rookies at MTSS. Over the past 5 years, we've built one of, if not the best, MTSS systems in Central Ohio. It's one of the reasons we've been visited by over 12 school districts just in the last 2 years to view and learn about our MTSS process. So now more than ever, it's time to take advantage of the data-rich culture in the systems of supports that we've built to target at-risk students and make really shrewd, surgical-like decisions for students. We've got the potential summer slide data as a starting point, combined with our historical data that we've already collected on students in both reading and math, plus we have intervention histories that are well documented. We should be able to jump right into personalized supports without the need to jump right into testing and assessment. I think this is a huge advantage that we have over some districts who, because of canceled state testing and, to be honest, subpar MTSS systems, won't have the information on hand for students that they need for guidance. So they're going to have to shut down and test right away to see where they're at. Because our data culture is robust and our systems are well-defined, it allows us to put social and emotional well-being of kids at the forefront and really focus on reestablishing the peer and teacher connections that they need to be successful in school. So while our MTS meetings and screenings may be pushed back, I would expect us to push them back compared to what we've done typically in school. Our MTS instruction will not be pushed back. We should be able to get up and running based on the historical data and documentation that we have. A couple of key factors that we'll consider during the MTSS process this fall is we're going to need to adjust our benchmarks and decision-making criteria and also establish what I like to call a new student 2.0 protocol. We've always known new students to our districts have been at heightened risk for academic risk. And because of this, we've developed protocol in past school years to ensure that new students transition into our schools successfully. I think it's going to be important that we create a protocol to identify students who have not been engaged in learning remotely since we left school and develop a similar protocol in our systems and support for them so that we make sure that when they do step foot back into our schools, that they don't feel like a brand new student and that they're adjusting appropriately. From a literacy instruction and intervention standpoint, I want to be as clear as I can as your literacy director and state just pretty bluntly that I'm really concerned. I think the nation might be completely underestimating the brewing literacy crisis in foundational reading skills being created. And this is a direct result of students not receiving live, direct instruction in reading. When we're talking about kids who are learning how to read, a computer cannot do it for them. As helpful as things like iReady and Lexia have been to complement our teachers in instruction, they're not going to teach a student how to read. So to steal words from Amy Acton, Marysville needs to be very intentional about flattening the potential illiteracy curve headed our way. So how do we do that? We, as soon as possible, we need to get back to the high-quality literacy instruction that we know we have in our schools. Again, this is an area where we can really take advantage of the work that we've completed over the past 5 years. High quality reading instruction is not new to us. We know what it looks like at tier one. We know what it looks like at tier two and at tier three. So in other words, our classroom instruction, our interventions, and what we do with our kids identified with reading disabilities is well defined. We're not guessing on what high-quality instruction looks like for those kids. I'm thankful that we're not figuring that out now because we have enough challenges in front of us to figure out how to implement the systems that we know are evidence-based. So our challenge doesn't lie in the creation, but more of the implementation under whatever model we're going to start school under. When I talk about kids that we need to target learning to read, that's going to encompass every K through 2 student. They're all learning how to read at some degree and some level. And then beyond that, grades 3 through 12, any student who's below grade level on word recognition, reading fluency, and accuracy, we need to interact with them live as much as possible. So the quicker that we can do that, we also know that the kids are going to be better off adjusting socially and emotionally, because the research has told us that reading and listening to reading can help with both anxiety and depression. So I've spoken with Diane and the central office team, and as soon as possible, I'm going to begin to create a literacy task force so we can meet these immediate challenges. We know that our teachers are our best hope for kids to learn. And if you've talk to our reading specialists, SLPs, and intervention teachers, they'll tell you, I often say, you will win or lose with your schedule. Now, I've always said that, talking about pull-out schedules for special education or reading support or speech and language services. Now we need to broaden that. We're talking about the overall general school schedule. As we gain clarity on what the start of the school year looks like, crafting schedules with how kids learn to read in mind will be paramount. We have to figure out how to maximize student time for direct reading instruction because it's our best alternative to recoup loss and make gains. To do this, we're going to need plans for both what we're going to do when kids are in school, most likely it looks like on a part-time basis, and also remotely, especially if we move again to a full remote learning platform. We're certainly going to need to take advantage of Zoom teaching sessions in both scenarios. We learned this school year that Zoom sessions can and worked well for many students and families. In fact, when we had over 70 kids involved in direct reading intervention with our reading specialists towards the end of the school year here, and when we offered families the opportunity to extend those Zoom reading sessions into the summer as part of our summer school program, 95% of those families answered yes to the extra sessions into summer. This speaks to the quality of instruction that they perceived was taking place. This was also echoed by our reading specialists and a lot of our teachers. They were surprised at how effective the direct Zoom sessions worked. So when we look at the start of the school year, heightening the amount of time that we're providing direct reading instruction and intervention with our students will be critical. And in order to do that, I'm going to put together a team. The team will consist of our reading specialists, classroom teachers, central office administrators, principals, to really sit down, get an overview of what school's going to look like, and then say, okay, how do we do this? All options are on the table. Zoom sessions, direct reading instruction, even if we have to take a mobile reading intervention bus to students, we can consider that as well. Then we can rely on our blended programs such as iReady and Lexia Core 5 to complement and maximize our direct reading instruction. So when we look at Bunsold, MHS, ECHS, and TRI with some of our older students, I know the admin teams are currently working on plans to provide additional support when the school year resumes to treat the start of school differently, really acknowledging the need for a time frame that's devoted to intervention for students to gain lost ground in learning, especially if they were marked incomplete through the remote learning session. So the schools are still, I think this plan is ever evolving. They're building, again, kind of a two-tier approach for when students are, what the plan looks like when students are in the building and also what it looks like remotely. So you can see here the details of the two plans and how they're dependent on what the start of school looks like. I hope this gives you a little bit of insight to where my head is and where the district's head is at with our Tier 2 plans. We still have a lot of unknowns, but we certainly have a heightened attention to make sure that we continue to implement best practices and do what's best for our kids. It's certainly going to be the greatest opportunity we've had to innovate, collaborate, and really inspire moving forward. Your continued support is greatly valued, and I hope the information I presented to you this evening has been informative. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mark Gallagher, the MTSS coordinator at Marysville Schools, and I'm here to deliver an update on the social-emotional learning implementation at Marysville Schools. Our agenda includes covering what our current mission and vision is when it comes to the social-emotional development of our students, what year one activities have been completed, and it includes things like programs and initiatives, community partnerships, our COVID-19 response, which I'll go a little bit in depth on specifically, and then what our year two activities look like. So with regard to our mission and vision, I always like starting off with defining what social-emotional learning is. It can be a rather nebulous topic, and if you ask 100 professionals to define social-emotional learning, you'll probably get about 100 different answers. So within our context, we always want to keep in mind that social-emotional learning is this process through which we understand and manage our emotions, we set and achieve goals, we show and feel empathy for others, we establish and build and maintain healthy and positive relationships, and we make good decisions overall. And one of the most important questions we needed to answer in year one when it comes to the social-emotional development of kids is, what do we believe? And this is our mission statement, that every student at Marysville Schools will have a felt sense of safety, hope, and agency, opportunities to develop social-emotional assets, experience a personal sense of belonging within the school community, and the desire to be the most that they can be. And this is our context, this is our goal, and this is what we're going to continue to work towards at Marysville Schools with relation to our kids and their social-emotional development. But the question becomes, how do we get there? And we've established a framework that's built on three specific pillars: having a social-emotional climate and culture, having opportunities for character and asset development, and then using socially inclusive practices, but then wrapping all of these things in community partnerships. Now, more specifically, we have six tenets within each one of these. So when we talk about a social-emotional climate and culture, we need to make sure that we have trauma-informed and nurturing classrooms in schools, which we've completed a round of that training in the current school year, and I'll go in more depth on that later. We want to make sure that we have positive behavioral interventions and supports in place in each one of our school buildings. And we also need to place a premium on student and staff wellness, especially on staff wellness. If the adults are not doing well, they're not going to be great models for social and emotional skill. And we want to make sure that we're putting a premium on those things because we're role models for kids. So we need to put a focus on that in the upcoming school year. And that's an integral part of our framework. When it comes to character and asset development, we want to make sure we're using student-centered practices. So things that we do relative to personalized learning, the PAXCA behavior game, and some other programs I'm going to talk about later, all create opportunities for students to receive student-centered practices. And we also want to have opportunities for social-emotional skill teaching, which will be part of our year one implementation of the social-emotional learning standards at Marysville Schools, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And then last but not least, we want to have opportunities when it comes to social inclusion to pursue passions, talents, and mutual interests. Because when kids have opportunities to develop these skills within the context of something they're very passionate about, that's when the real magic happens for them. So overall, this is our framework from a big picture standpoint on how we want to develop social emotional wellness in our students. As far as our year one activities go, we've started off by developing a standards continuum of the social-emotional learning standards from the state of Ohio. And I have an example down below, but it included a multidisciplinary group of stakeholders ranging from guidance counselors and school psychologists to teachers and intervention specialists, as well as instructional coaches and administrators. We utilized some professional development time to make this work come to life, and our goal was to establish a critical set of social-emotional learning standards and targets, and I have, like I said, an example down below. One of the key kind of goals that we wanted out of this work was to ensure that we were honoring the work and the vision and identities that buildings had established for themselves around their habits of mind. So we made sure that we realigned all of our standards back to those building level habits of mind. So you'll have a habit of mind that's aligned to a standard with targets or learning progressions attached to that standard. This was also our first year doing a high-fidelity implementation of the Signs of Suicide program at Marysville Schools. We particularly targeted grades 6, 7, and 9 in the current school year. And we included things like staff trainings as well as a parent awareness night. There is a student curriculum which took 2 days to deliver. It's roughly 45 minutes per half of the curriculum to deliver to students. And then it's always followed by a student risk screening, so we were able to ascertain risk. In terms of some of those outcomes, roughly 11% of our student population screened at risk for suicidality, and approximately 3% of our student population was either referred or a safety plan was generated in order to make sure that we were able to support them with their challenges. And in order to get all of this off the ground, we actually used a multidisciplinary, multi-organizational series of partnerships that included Nationwide Children's Hospital, Marysville Schools, Mary Haven, the Mental Health and Recovery Board of Union County, as well as the PASS organization, which PASS is the acronym. Their actual name is Prevention Awareness Support Services. We also took great care to provide trauma-responsive professional development opportunities at Marysville Schools. And we did this in partnership with Solberg Consulting out of the Cincinnati area, particularly Sarah Buffy, who's their founding director, and she's their trauma-responsive care trainer. We provided this to all K-12 staff, and you'll see I have some asterisks there, because we do have a couple buildings we still need to get to as a result of the COVID-19 quarantine. The format was a 2-hour workshop with an emphasis on the science of trauma and then your role as an educator within the healing process relative to the traumatic events that a child may have experienced. They also provided some on-site consultation and problem-solving with regard to individual cases as part of that professional development. And like I had mentioned, we still have a couple buildings that we need to get to in the upcoming school year due to the COVID-19 quarantine. And those schools include Edgewood and Northwood Elementary. We also augmented our universal screening batteries for social-emotional risk in this school year. Particularly, we brought on board the Cell Web Diagnostic, and that impacts grades K-6. It is a digital, computer-driven, performance-based diagnostic that includes social-emotional tasks that range from students having to identify basic emotions all the way to solving complex social problem-solving vignettes as well. We completed that in the fall of 2019. We were not able to get to a second administration this year, again, due to the impact of the COVID-19 quarantine. Overall, though, 72.5% of our K-6 students demonstrate developmentally appropriate social-emotional learning skills. So that's not quite where we want it to be, and we've got some work ahead of us, but it gives us a starting point in that regard. In the 7 through 12 sphere, we also utilize the Strengths and Difficulties questionnaire, which kind of follows a student self-report function. And then depending upon risk levels, we have a staff report for at-risk students. We also completed a parent pilot that was voluntary at a few of our buildings to have parents also weigh in on their child's risk as well. And we were able to triangulate data across the student, the teacher, and the parent in those places. Overall, though, in the 7 through 12 world, just under 70% of our students were at low risk for social-emotional difficulties, so we're close to average or average. And like I said, there was a parent version that was completed on a voluntary pilot basis at the Early College High School in BMS for the current school year. We also did some updating with our global risk assessments. Particularly, we brought on board the Ohio Healthy Youth Environment Survey, the OES survey. It is a voluntary and anonymous student-completed risk survey. It looks at things from smoking and drug and alcohol abuse to sexual activity to perceptions of school, home, challenges children may face, etc. We did this as part of a multidisciplinary, multi-organizational partnership between the Drug Free Coalition, the Health Department, our Mental Health and Recovery Board, Mary Haven, the PASS organization, Marysville Schools, and then OES, which is actually their own sub-organization through the state of Ohio. Fairbanks and North Union was also part of that partnership, so we did this as an entire county. Kind of the benefit of utilizing the OES survey is it allows us to have comparison data with other counties throughout the state of Ohio. So we can actually find other counties that are very similar to us and kind of compare ourselves to them and look at what specific areas and challenges they may be facing given current circumstances or times of the year. And then last but not least, it also allows us to establish Union County trend data so that we can, over time, track, report, and respond to the particular needs of our students and our kids. Another initiative from the current school year was the implementation of the School Navigator Program. So this was a pilot for the current school year, which involved having two designated mental health professionals for Marysville Schools. The scope of the pilot included having one professional at Creekview and one professional at Bunsell Middle School 3 days per week. And then those professionals served the 9 through 12 and kindergarten through fourth grade spheres on those off days. So if they were at Creekview on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, they were serving, you know, the rest of K-4, they were serving the rest of our 9-12 students. And we're actually looking at adding and expanding that program in the upcoming school year. Their responsibilities included mental health and social service referrals, and that was done regardless of insurance. So no matter what a person's insurance was, even though they were these professionals were provided through Mary Haven, we connected them to whichever services or agencies the family wished to be connected to, again, regardless of insurance. We also were able to provide case management in the school setting, again, regardless of insurance or lack of insurance. Did not prohibit students from having a school navigator touch base with them on a weekly basis for different periods of time, just in order to reinforce, support, and again, augment the skills that students may be working on in private therapy or with a specialist. Again, regardless of insurance, we were able to do that. They also provide school-based mental health interventions, so they were trained in the Second Steps curriculum, and they supported groups that way. They also ran groups that deliver the Botman Life Skills curriculum as well, which are two evidence-based interventions that are school-based in nature. They also had weekly team meetings, so given the buildings that they were working in, they had regular contact with those building social-emotional teams, which included school counselors, school psychologists, administrators, and in some instances instructional coaches, in order to keep folks up to date on kind of the happenings and the comings and goings of where students and families were within the process. And then in terms of outcomes, just in the short window of time that we were able to get up and running with the School Navigator Program for the current school year, we had 60 mental health referrals. Seven of those our referrals resulted in just brief intervention. That would have just been a few sessions, and then the student would have transitioned out. And then there was one non-referral out of all the referrals that were placed by these folks. And just on doing some qualitative surveying with our staff, 87.5% of our building social-emotional team members actually viewed the school navigator role as beneficial to their building and to their kids and families. We also expanded the PASCA behavior game in the current school year, and that was specifically at Mill Valley and Navin Elementary. We also did a PACS tools training with their paraprofessionals and some of their low-incidence intervention specialists, so folks that serve students with autism or students with multiple disabilities. And just as a reiteration, the PACS behavior game is preventative in nature, is also trauma-informed. So this kind of walks hand-in-hand with our mission to provide student-centered practices, but then also having trauma-informed or trauma-responsive and nurturing classrooms and schools. We were also fortunate enough this year, you've heard me talk about them a little bit, to bring on some new community partners, specifically Prevention Awareness Support Services, PASS. They assist us with suicide, drug, and alcohol abuse and mental health prevention programming. They actually have Ohio certified prevention specialists, so there is a process for receiving that credential, and that's who they employ. They also had a number of deliverables specifically that they assisted us with. So they delivered the curriculum for the science of suicide. They also did some intervention programming with us with the DBT Skills in Schools curriculum, which I'm going to talk about an expansion of that curriculum for the upcoming school year. But we utilize this as a targeted intervention, and it's also an evidence-based program. And then they also assist us with our Gatekeepers programs in the 7 through 12 space, which is youth-led suicide and mental health prevention. So there's a number of activities that they help facilitate and proctor as part of those groups. And then with Nationwide Children's, we were able to partner with their Center for Suicide Prevention and Research for the delivery of the Signs of Suicide program, which included our parent nights or our parent trainings and staff trainings, as well as acting as our clinical team counterparts during days that we had implementation. So after kids would receive the Signs of Suicide curriculum, there was a screening component attached to that, and they helped us operate the triage process and then do clinical follow-up on students that were at risk. And then they also were able to provide some suicide prevention and postvention consulting throughout the course of the school year with us. So I'm going to switch gears now and talk a little bit about our COVID-19 response and how we prepared ourselves to meet the mental health, behavioral health, and social emotional needs of our students and families in the midst of the quarantine. And one of the first things we did is we established a telephone-driven triage process, and this was delivered to and given to our teaching staff, our administrators, and our guidance staff. It included having a set of screening questions for our administrators and our guidance staff, digital referrals and consent forms as well. So we knew doing in-person signatures, things like that, would be a challenge logistically. So we ended up getting digital setups for all of those things established. We were also able to do school resource officer and school navigator wellness checks on kids and families that had completely disengaged from school, or we hadn't heard anything from them for quite a while. So we were able to leverage those assets as well. We were also able to deliver digital social emotional learning lessons. So we had school counselors going into digital classrooms and actually delivering content. In those places, they also ran intervention groups digitally, and they had check-ins with students via Zoom. We were also able to establish a collection of parent community resources, listings, and activities that were posted to our COVID-19 page that included a number of different things that families were able to engage with or they could go to in order to find resources to assist. We also continue to activate our community response teams, which are multi-discipline, multi-organizational teams that include folks from family council to Mary Haven to Ohio Guidestone to juvenile justice to the school system. And those were, again, continued and activated in order to help support our high acuity youth in their situations. And some of our results out of having our kind of ducks in a row and a response in place, we actually were able to thwart a number of suicide attempts that occurred throughout the quarantine, and it also resulted in us being able to place referrals from mental health and social services for high-risk youth and families as part of that process as well. I have a little graphic on how we ran our triage process to determine risk. In terms of the upcoming school year, we want to place an emphasis on mitigating the impact of the COVID-19 quarantine. And part of that includes having universal social-emotional programming in place. In K through 4, we have the PASCA behavior game that meets that need, but we really wanted something for the 5 through 12 space. And a curriculum that was universally recommended by the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, which is like the Mental Health and Recovery Board of the federal government, that curriculum was the DBT Skills in Schools, DBT Steps A curriculum that I had mentioned before that PASS had delivered to some of our students in the current school year. And we're looking at expanding that to be universally provided in 5 through 12. And I'll show you kind of an implementation framework and proposal for the upcoming school year here on the next slide. We're also going to really focus on partnering with our teachers around the PAXGood behavior game in K through 4, just to make sure that we're delivering those kernels and those practices to a high level of fidelity. We're also exploring delivering the second step curriculum to whole classes, specific to certain skills that we really want kids to work on around, like distress tolerance and emotional regulation, and that would be supported by our school counselors. And then we're also looking at an expansion of the school navigator program. So we're going to seek to add an additional mental health professional through some competitive funding and blended funding at the county level, which would bring us to a total of 3 mental health professionals for Marysville schools. So in an ideal world, we would have one professional at Creekview that also serves part of elementary. We would have a professional at Bunsell Middle School that also serves the remaining elementaries. And then we have one person that solely serves the 9 through 12 world. In terms of a proposed implementation of the DBT Steps A curriculum, we're looking at doing 5 lessons in each grade, in grades 5 through 9 for the upcoming school year, just to keep things manageable. And then as we continue our implementation into subsequent years, we will add additional lessons. So 5th grade will always have those same 5 lessons, but then in year 2, 6th grade will pick up a combination of lessons 13 and 14, and then 8, 9, 10, and 11, and that will be carried through 9th grade for next year. So then in each year, we're gonna continue to spiral the curriculum out so that at the end of 5 years, if a student has been with us since 5th grade, when they leave their freshman year, they will have received all of the content within the DBT Steps A curriculum. And then when they enter 10th grade, there will be a review of the content that they previously learned in order to reinforce those skills before they transition into their junior year. Looking ahead into the 2020-2021 school year, we have a number of social-emotional learning activities that we're going to be engaging in. Primarily an adoption and implementation of the social emotional learning standards. So we want to make sure that we're using a very tempered and deliberate approach that kind of leans into trailblazers and pioneers to help initiate the work at each phase. Our plan accounts for professional development, content purchases, technology requirements and support from central offices, tier 1 and SEL teams. To make sure that we are adequately supporting the people within that year 1 cohort and subsequent year cohorts. Our initial implementation will include trailblazers from the K through 4 world, as well as the early college high school, and then all of Tri-Academy. So in terms of participants, we're looking at about 20 to 25 total participants as part of our initial implementation. Semester 1 will primarily focus on professional development. We've outlined 3 different dates that would potentially serve as the kickoffs for that professional development cycle, which will include the science of social-emotional learning, connecting practice and curriculum to the social-emotional learning standards, and then assessing social-emotional development, what that looks like in the context of a school. And then semester 2 will include the classroom implementation by that initial cohort of the standards, with the ask being that they integrate social-emotional learning content into their course at least once per week, or within their classroom content area at least once per week. And there will also be an SEL-oriented book selection and ordering process as part of our language arts curriculum adoption. And we're working on a mechanism for what that's going to look like, just to ensure that funding is spread around equitably throughout the school district. Subsequent adoptions of the social-emotional learning standards will follow the same cycle. There will always be a semester 1 series of professional development followed by a semester 2 implementation. We'll do book purchases on the tail end of an adoption cycle, so whether it's science or social studies or mathematics, we'll walk hand in hand with that adoption. And then we'll have active support from our social emotional and tier 1 teams at a central office. We will also be engaging in some staff climate, culture, and wellness activities in the upcoming school year. Particularly, we're going to roll out the ASCD School Improvement Tool, which is an anonymous 15-minute staff survey that aligns with the ASCD and the CDC's Whole Child, Whole School, Whole Community framework. Particularly, it assesses climate, culture, leadership, curriculum instruction, how the school, you know, school system is doing, school building is doing with family and community engagement, how we're doing professional development, are we adequately supporting our staff from a capacity standpoint, and are we using evidence-based and best practices around assessment. So it gives our staff an opportunity to really, you know, talk about and share their feelings and indicate what our areas of need are from a school-based standpoint or from a school district standpoint. And then the results will be utilized for strategic planning moving forward. So it'll kind of act as the blueprint for where we go next as a district. We also are going to do some professional development on the impacts of vicarious or secondary trauma, which is very real and is something that staff members grapple with. And so we want to make sure that we're doing some education around that topic matter, and then also providing some professional development around practices for self-care. So doing the things that mitigate the effects and impacts of vicarious or secondary trauma. We will also, we're in the planning phases of a Union County Suicide Awareness Walk. And this is done in partnership with the Union County Suicide Prevention Coalition. It will occur the morning of September 12th in 2020, as of right now, unless there are restrictions or anything in place as a result of COVID-19. We'll be launching that event from Impact Stadium, and it's estimated that we'll have somewhere between 100 to 150 participants as part of the initial walk, and we suspect that it will grow in time as we continue to do this. And activities will include having a community organization and service provider fair, so folks that are participants can learn about the various goings-on at Ohio Guidestone and Mary Haven and Marysville Schools and the Mental Health and Recovery Board. We will have T-shirts for sale in order to help support subsequent walks, which Marysville Schools will be listed as a sponsor on that T-shirt. There will also be some marketing and awareness content, so there will be banners available for people to kind of carry and have throughout the walk, as well as opportunities to create posters that people can carry with them when they go on the walk. And then our walk will start at Impact Stadium, and we're going to walk to the Mental Health Recovery Board from there. We're still in the midst of trying to plan which route we want to take to get there, but it's looking like we're going to take Maple to get down to the Mental Health Recovery Board from Impact Stadium. We're also in the middle of the UC Talks campaign, and the UC Talks campaign is a countywide initiative that's a social norming marketing campaign with the idea and express interest in building awareness around suicide prevention, mental health, building strengths in our youth, and preventing alcohol and substance abuse. So really shining a light on these things and equipping parents and caregivers and families with the words in order to engage their youth in these conversations. It is a multidisciplinary and multi-organizational work group that includes folks from the Drug Free Coalition, the Mental Health and Recovery Board, Mary Haven, the PASS organization, and then the various school systems in the county. In terms of content matter, there is a website in the works. That's currently in draft form, and we're in the midst of putting in all the content matter and front matter within the website. There will be talking points for parents and caregivers on how to actually engage in their youth in these conversations. And there will also be Spotify commercials as well. And in the long run, after we kind of get all of the scripts and county-level content out there, we're going to shift our focus to Marysville Schools, where we're going to actually highlight and talk a little bit about our work and having some content and branding specific to us around the UC Talks campaign that we'll do as well. And the idea is that we want to have this content, the videos, the commercials, things like that, available at sporting events, parent-teacher conferences, theater productions. Basically, anytime we have an audience of parents and caregivers, we want to create opportunities to get this stuff in front of them in terms of that. We'll also be engaging in the Handle with Care initiative, which is State of Ohio driven, and it's a trauma responsive cross systems collaborative care initiative. It provides the school or a child care agency with a heads up when a child has been identified at the scene of a traumatic event. So if first responders are going to a home for anything from a domestic dispute to a caregiver having a serious medical concern, where emergency you know, services are called. This would provide the school building that that child attends with a notification that they were exposed to a traumatic event. And it will set off kind of a series of internal systems in order to make sure that that child is adequately supported for the remainder of the school day and moving forward. This is a multi-agency and multidisciplinary partnership and program that's going to be coming off the ground. So it's going to involve the Union County Sheriff's Office, the City of Marysville's Police Department, the Drug Free Coalition, the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, Hopewell Health Centers, which is one of the primary partners within the project in combination with the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and then the Handle With Care organization will help facilitate training. Like I said before, kind of the program goals are ensuring that children who are exposed to adverse traumatic events receive appropriate interventions. We really want to build resilience through positive relationships with our teachers and staff members and first responders as well. And that really kind of covers where we're at, how we handle COVID-19, and where we're going. And last but not least, I just have a list of references that kind of helped us develop the framework for how, you know, we're going to instill healthy social-emotional development in our youth. If anyone has questions, I encourage you to please get a hold of me. My email is mark.gallagher@mevsd.us, and I thank you for your time.
That's an awful lot of information. Yes. Anybody want to stand up for a second?
Yes.
Okay, let's stand up and stretch a little bit. Whew. Yeah, that's
Are these presentations on the notes or?
They won't load, so I'll find a way to share them with you.
I think can't see some of it.
Mark's was on.
Mark's was loaded into your section of the
not on board docs, but it was on your update, like the
correct
yeah on what Diane sent to us for her evaluation.
Oh, okay. Mark's, we did have Mark's loaded into the executive content
okay.
of this meeting, but
yeah.
may have taken it off.
Yeah,
I think but I can send them to you.
Okay.
Yep.
I just couldn't see a lot of stuff.
Some of them got blurry on the large screen.
Yeah.
It's like all of those partnerships and stuff with the social emotional. I mean, is that something? Are there costs to the district for those partnerships? Or is this?
No, those are just
okay.
natural connections
yeah.
and really part of kind of that wraparound idea.
Right.
And actually, I would say we're the beneficiary of a lot of grants that the Mental Health and Recovery Board. I mean, that's how we're getting navigators and
right.
increased supports.
Right.
So we've been able to partner with them in order to get some additional services.
Okay, yeah.
For anyone that thinks this school district just wings it.
I know, yeah.
This was really, for me, eye-opening. The depth of thought and planning, the degree of preparation, the intentionalness of all of the actions and how everything is coordinated. And as I was listening to it, I kept thinking about our role as a board and how we fit in. And obviously, we don't get into the details of this. But in terms of making sure that we are supportive with time, resources, staff, to be able to accomplish all of these things, that just kept coming back as I was looking at this. Because I know we had talked about, and I had mentioned at the agenda meeting, just recognizing that coming back into the next year, there is going to take a lot of work on the part of the teachers and the staff, some additional time or some additional effort to be able to put all of these things in place and make sure that we're ready to receive the kids when they show up.
We did talk to the union president about the possibility of giving extended days at the beginning of the year and hope to reach an MOU with them that we could bring to the next board meeting. for that purpose. Timing didn't allow us to get that done before we came here tonight, but with that idea in mind, how are we going to be best prepared? How are we going to be best prepared to switch to remote learning tomorrow or the day after if that would happen? And how are we going to take care of our kids in a very holistic way, academically and emotionally?
Mm-hmm. And even if you know, say, weeks ahead of time, there is just an awful lot that needs to be put in place in order to be able to do what we do in the Marysville schools right. And if we can't do it right, then we've got some more problems.
So I have a question about the big picture, which you may not be able to answer yet. But I remember when you presented about all day, every day kindergarten, you showed us that the kids who don't have it, even by third grade, they can still be like demonstrably behind.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be that sort of thing where what you call the COVID-19 slide is going to stick with this group, or is it something that we can make up for somehow?
So I would tell you, I think we can make up for it, but we're going to have to be very strategic the way Steve suggested, and make sure that we hit the ground running. What Steve is saying is there's an amount of predictability.
Mm-hmm.
We already know the profile of students who may dip, right? We have that much data. So starting out in support groups with additional reading time, additional social-emotional instruction and interventions, and starting out there instead of assessing kids when they come in the door, like, welcome back, here, take a test.
Yeah.
And then we filter you to groups. Let's be smart about what we have and then start to be fluid with those groups. But, you know, he brings up very valid points about the learning, the importance of learning literacy and being able to watch literacy take place in an instructional format. We've talked about small group instruction and the use of, instead of face masks, the shields, so that interaction can still take place.
Mm-hmm.
So all those types of conversations are happening.
It's going to be very key when we do go back to school. Those staff members are going to have to build relationships very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't build any relationship and we have to pivot to online learning,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be close to impossible to engage kids with a teacher that they don't even know, that they don't have any relationship with, that they don't, you know, care about. So
that was the benefit of having it in March, right? Mm-hmm. We had the whole year to have teachers and students connect. And so that will be the, you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
I was really interested, you know, the suggestion was to have a literacy bus.
Yeah,
I like that.
I know.
That it goes and
it's like magic school bus.
Yeah.
One of the requests that is made of the legislature is to provide some flexibility in how buses are used,
mm-hmm.
and how we reach the kids.
Honestly, we looked at Wi-Fi hotspots as buses that we can move into neighborhoods over the summer.
All right.
Yeah.
The cost was exponentially higher than purchasing the hotspots for families,
mm-hmm.
but that it's the same idea that generated out of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How would that look, Diane? Like the bus type of
a literacy bus?
You'd
in essence have teachers going into communities where they had pods of kids, work with a set of kids and run reading instruction groups.
So would they like have a distancing thing?
I'm sure we'd have to talk to the health commissioner to make sure we met the guidelines, but
mm-hmm.
At the same time we don't want it to be scary, right?
Right.
So that's the, when you think of kindergarten, as my heart as an educator, I can't imagine
right.
some of the things. So, you know, as we've talked to the health commissioner and the medical advisory group, in spaces like this, I just listened to the governor's press conference in part today. The risk for kids is increasing a little bit now, where it wasn't before. But I think the big thing in our planning is we have to be cognizant about protecting our staff.
Right.
We have staff over the exceeding the age limits, and I have that all broke. I think I might have sent it to you. I don't remember those numbers, but we have aging staff, some with multiple risk factors, and that's really who we look to protect in these circumstances, because the rate for children is really quite small today.
Right.
So those are some of the nuances, I think, that are unique to schools.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Yeah. And, well, thanks.
Sorry it was long, but
well,
there was a lot
There is a lot. And like you said, I mean, it's great knowing, I think one of the town hall meetings that we went to, they said at the very beginning, the most important part is having a strategy. You know, and it's like, well, it's pretty clear we've got a strategy out there and lots of data to support that. So thank you.
I would like to say thank you to Steve in particular for being very honest in his assessment. I mean, I've been reading quite a bit also. This slide is going to be big. Mm-hmm. And reading slide, math slide over the summer is bigger than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But this COVID slide is going to be very big, especially in those critical years, those middle school years. I suspect that that's when kids either choose to read or they choose not to read over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And with the summer reading program, not in its traditional sense at the library, that's when a lot of kids would engage in those reading activities, and that's not really available in its traditional sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, next on our agenda, we have any public participation?
We did not.
Okay, nothing was emailed in, so again, just a reminder for anybody watching this, for the time being, our public participation is handled by emailing a day before our meeting, and then that would be read at our meeting for you. Moving on to the reports. Is there a High Point report?
Just wanted to go over there. Continuing to work over the summer months on the final architectural drawings for the revisions to the High Point main campus.
Okay.
So that's kind of a really big thing. And I covered, I think, most items last time.
Okay. Superintendent's report.
So I prepared a report about 1 o'clock because everything is changing, and already one of my items has changed with the governor's press conference at 2 o'clock, which I missed part of it. So I'm going to speak in general terms right now. Our athletic programs just started phase 2, which allows for 15 student athletes to be together within certain protocols inside and 50 outside, which was an increase from our 10 in a pod at the beginning. After 2 weeks, we would have moved to phase 3, but the governor released that next week they can go to full contact, so I have some learning to do about that. That's brand new at 2 o'clock, and we did not know that change was coming. Our facilities will open to rentals, and that's primarily just outside in the summer. We don't rent our buildings in the summer because of cleaning schedules, so open outside July 1. Each person renting a space from us has to submit a safety plan in which they're required to meet certain guidelines, because at the end of the day, the district is responsible for the enforcement of whatever that activity is, not who's renting. So they are required to submit a plan, which will be reviewed by Ryan and Jonathan. Just wanted to thank the high school admin, teachers, Vera, Didi, everybody for making graduation as great as it was. I know there was a lot of angst, and everything from the Adopt a Graduate, which was community sponsored, to the banners uptown, to drive-throughs and communities and all of that type of stuff. It turned out to be a very special event, and we've received overwhelmingly positive feedback on that. Mm-hmm. I did share with you, we track our social media report, and we've increased followers on every platform throughout the COVID, which I think speaks to our communication, people being connected in different ways. We have Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook. I also wanted to let you know that our numbers in Alt-K for next year have increased. So we are up to 49 students, which has launched us to open another half section. So we posted in tonight's agenda, you have a recommendation actually to hire a teacher for that spot. It's half Alt-K and then half reading intervention at Mill Valley. Regular kindergarten right now, our enrollment stands around 334, which kind of puts us on the trajectory to be about 400 when school starts, which is pretty normal. So in comparison years. All teaching positions have been filled after tonight's agenda with your approval. The only positions we have lingering are a clinic aide at Edgewood and a Creekview custodian. If you didn't watch part of the governor's release, and I alluded to this today, there was a special piece where a doctor was, a pediatrician, talked about they are seeing some increases, and I'm looking at my notes here, of children with asymptomatic. There's also been, in the recent weeks, have been an increased number of students diagnosed with COVID. One in part to increase testing, so they're testing more, but the overall percentage is increasing, which tells you that more kids are getting it, about a 5 to 6% increase, and an increase in hospital admissions. So sometimes the kids don't appear very sick at the onset, so we're just going to have to keep, I think that'll be one of those factors that we'll build into our return to school plan. My I will run through this with you. I want to give you an update on, so you kind of heard our instructional approach. I'm now going to talk to you about format and what we might expect moving forward in our plan in order to make plans for the start of next school year. So as I've said to all of you, right now we probably have more questions and there's more unknowns than knowns. But really, as a district, we're taking this as an opportunity to reimagine schools and kind of rethink, take it on as an opportunity. We want to maintain a focus on our pillars, so what we believe in, and I think you probably heard that in Ashley's presentation, and we really want to continue the idea of choice. No one knows their child better than mom and dad. And so we want to be able to allow for some flexibility and choice as we move forward. So I shared with you kind of details of the very first survey we did, or second survey we did with parents. We did one initially when we went into remote learning and then at the close of remote learning. And basically, these are kind of highlights, things that we did well, communication, instructional materials, people were available to my child, considering the well-being of the child. We just talked about the social-emotional, and this is kind of just a recap. And areas for improvement as a district is we did also hear, you know, about 20% of the people said our communication was not clear. Inconsistent programs is something that we heard ongoing, that even within the same building, teachers were posting things differently. So I think you heard Chris talk about our plan to improve that for people. And about 20% said that the expectations were not reasonable. One thing I wish we would have asked in which direction, but we didn't ask that question, like were they too hard or too easier? So I would say all in all, for the way COVID hit us, we did a pretty decent job, but we have some areas that are targeted that we could improve on. So preparing for next fall. So I was in a meeting last week with the state superintendent, and I just stole the quote for the meeting. It was plan for the worst, hope for the best, and be ready to turn on a dime. So in essence, you got to plan for every scenario, even though we don't have guidelines today. I think that's pretty important to put out there. But also be ready at any time to switch directions. Current guidelines that were released suggest that if one student in a classroom were to test positive, that entire building would in fact be shut down. I don't know that that's really where we'll be when everything comes around, but just to give you a sense. So preparing for next fall, as you know, we've done parent surveys. As all of you know, we also have a medical advisory team made up of local healthcare, local doctors, and our own school nurse. And so we've met twice and kind of vetted through, really thinking about putting our staff first. They're sharing research about what's happening in other places and countries. They've really dug into childhood COVID and given us some feedback on that. We've talked about the idea of masks, engaging with parents. So that committee is up and running. We have a community task force that's meeting next Wednesday evening, and weekly meetings with the Union County Health Commissioner. So I meet with Jason Orsina along with Adam and Rich, the other two superintendents in the county, and we share best practices, strategies. What's going to work in Marysville may not work in North Union, but we are collaborating on that. So end-of-the-year surveys, I believe I sent this information earlier this week, but I wanted to hit a couple highlights. So even if there's not a vaccine available, about 70% of our families are saying we're going to send our kid back to school. And we still have this chunk of unsure and no's, right? So as we look at our staff, about 82% of the staff says they'll be back, and 17%, 18% say, probably not. No, maybe they have a pre-existing medical condition or whatever. So we also ask the family question to families. So maybe you care for your parents live with you or something like that, grandparents live with you. And so it's about 80%, 20. So obviously a call for some type of different situation or being cognizant of that. Mm-hmm. And we ask teachers the same thing. Is there something that will cause you to work remotely? So we talked about, what if we looked at some other kind of model, a 50% model, where maybe you went AM, PM, you went one day or 2 days a week, and you switched with another group. So there was some choice here. And so as we move through here, you can see that, well, AM, PM tanked across the board. parents did not want AM, PM type schedule. The 1 week at a time and 1 week off actually resonated higher with them. If we were able to offer these, which would be better, you can see alternating day and alternating week classes were much better than the AM, PM. So as you consider, how concerned are you with childcare? Because that was some of the feedback we received in the written portion of that survey. 63% of our parents are not concerned, and they were asked on a scale. I talked a little bit about medical advisory team already, I think. They're going to help us with instituting safety protocols. So we've talked about those highly dense areas, cafeterias, hallways, those types of things. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the task force. The task force is made up of 30 parents and staff members. Their goal is to look at that hybrid schedule. So we, by looking at the data, we believe that there will be a need for a remote learning option for some kids. So because we believe in choice, if a family chooses remote learning, that choice will exist. So understand there'll be a remote learning choice because maybe the child themselves is a diabetic or has asthma or something like that. So that would be a choice for kids and families. But then we also believe that we need to roll out this notion of a hybrid schedule. So we know AM and PM isn't popular, so that's probably not a great option. But looking at the 2 days on, 3 days off, vice versa type schedule, 1 week on, or the other possibilities that exist out there that we did not get feedback or haven't been shared with us in one way, shape, or another. So that will be the focus of this group. This group will focus on looking at the different hybrid schedules. One option, even that has been shared, is all K-6 come. So speaking to Steve's data on the COVID slide, all K-6 would come every single day, but 7-12 would operate remotely. So I think there's a lot of options out there to be considered and collect information on, and that's the goal of this task force.
Is that something that's being put together regardless of the recommendations or the guidance from the state? In other words, if the state says you can do anything you want, school districts, are we thinking that we want a hybrid model independently of what they're telling us?
So I think that will be something we are going to talk to the task force about as well. So what I believe the guidance will say, I think the guidance will give suggested activities. For example, I believe they may give a radius around a student, for example. That was some of the draft. You could have a 6-foot radius around a student. Well, when you look at your square footage of a classroom, that's probably about 10 children at a time. And so at the same time, I think the state is going to say, my guess is that they may say something like, but if you can't do that, we're not going to require you to do that, but this is the safest way in order to approach school. So we feel like bringing people together now, we hope the guidance will be out shortly after, but it could be as late as July. What we'd like to do is bring something back to the board at next board meeting, but really not give a final decision until, you know, I don't know yet. Maybe like August 1st, we will tell you exactly what we're going with. Just because if you think about the past 2 months, how quickly things have changed, what will happen in the next 2 months? But we do need to put a drop dead date on it that this is the schedule we're going to go with. We'll get feedback from parents too about when that seems to make sense. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking down the road, it seems like it's going to be very difficult to manage in the classrooms a hybrid model, a in-person model, a completely online model for one teacher. I mean, I don't know how that's going
to... Yeah, let me speak to that. Great, mm-hmm. great segue. So you also saw we had about 20% of our teachers say, I'm not sure I can come back to school, right? Mm-hmm. So what we'd like to do is match those teachers to the students who have reported. Mm-hmm. So we would get away from being prepared for a remote model. Now, you're going to have to be prepared for a remote model as a classroom teacher if we switch tomorrow. But as far as managing a student's progress and growth, we would hope to get some alignment between the staff that chooses to, that can't come back to work for multiple reasons, to the students who can't come back for different reasons. So you may be a teacher with some varying grade levels. So maybe you're an eighth grade teacher and you take all of the kids in the 5-8 band. For example, I don't know, I'm throwing out samples. The benefit from some of the things that you heard Ashley and Chris talk about is on class pages, everything is shareable from a teacher's perspective. So if I'm a fifth grade math teacher, I could then share all of those things with that eighth grade teacher that's facilitating that. So that's our hope at this point, because I don't believe we're going to have, let's say we have a fourth grade teacher, I don't think we're going to have enough fourth grade students across the district to link with that one teacher. Right. So I think there'll have to be some grade banding that occurs.
Mm-hmm. So
now again, this is all based on guidelines that we don't necessarily have. Mm-hmm. But
and it also links into the legislation that was passed that flexibility this year in
licensure.
People, yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. People not being able to teach necessarily in their area.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, as you're talking about it, the classroom of kids is going to look a lot different.
Right. We would guess at this point that it would. Here's what we believe. Like you said, it'll be hard. We know how to do 100% everybody coming to school, right? And we have some inclinations about the safety measures there, right? Good hygiene, social distancing. We get that. And we get remote learning and what we need to get better at. We heard that. What we don't get is the hybrid model. We don't have a hybrid model established that we can say, here's the hybrid model. So that's why at this point we're fostering this committee to help us design that.
At I think it was a town hall meeting that we were in, we were talking about one of the things that was being shared across the state in that meeting was communicating the knowns and the unknowns as you're going through the process.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping the community one step behind you.
Mm-hmm. So there's a video going out Monday to the community that Billy
Did
and I
Did you guys
taped,
plan that?
That Billy and I taped today.
Okay.
That is a modified version of this presentation, telling our community where we're at in the next steps.
Yeah.
Yep. And it will be all synced up Monday. So Sunday night, the task force is getting a video from me. They've already committed to the task force, but they're getting the video from me to kind of provide them the background and where we're going to start coming in the door. And then on Monday, all the parents in the district and community will receive my video.
Diane, is there a understanding on the part of the administration or the teachers at this point that individual teachers will be allowed to just say, I'm not coming back, I don't feel safe, but I want to continue to work. Is that the understanding, or is it too?
I would say we're not there yet. So there's some legal issues with that, and so some of those are being panned out on why people can or cannot return to work and those types of things. So we cannot ask if you have a medical condition that prevents you from returning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some tiered things that we've been working on with some people through HR. But we have been, I think two emails have gone out, at least one, about that. So when we look at the hybrid scheduling, we want to keep personalized learning and choice in mind. So one of the things that, for example, there would be high-risk classes. Classes like band and choir are considered high-risk because of the moisture droplets come from those things. Marching band is fine. It's outside. We're allowed to go back to part of that. It's when we come indoors. Right. So we're working on, which was a recommendation from the medical committee team, is to kind of rank those 1 to 3. So parents have some understanding when they're going into some of those courses. Setting like this might be a 1. But when we get around a group and do small group reading instruction, it could increase to a 3. So those are the things that they'll be reviewing as well. We want to make sure we honor the parent survey that we sent out And the biggest thing is committing to those safety standards. As I mentioned before, you know, we are concerned about staff, staff that could have pre-existing conditions. Not, I don't want to come off as we're not concerned about students, because at large, that's the, that population is not experiencing what we know though some of our other sections of the population are. So as you talked about our knowns and unknowns, it's like you queued me up. What we know that our plan must include choice. It's going to involve remote learning, and it has to be flexible. So we know that those things have to be evident in our plan. I have one more up here. We also know that we need our parents. Somehow we have to, we'd like to work on a series of public service announcements or something. If your kid's sick or someone in your household is sick, we need you to keep them home. And now that we're going to be better at remote learning, you can engage that way when your child is sick. We're looking at protocols for temperature checks, but the feedback from the medical advisory committee is when you hoard kids to take their temperature, you're actually bringing a mass of people together and you increase your risk. So it'd be best suited if those types of things could take place at home. So we're really going to depend on our parents to partner with us. And transportation currently is limited to the first guidelines that came out to one student per seat. But for example, if Todd and I were brother and sister, you could sit in the same seat or if you were from that same household. But all of those seats have to be assigned because if Todd, for example, showed up with COVID, we have to be able to identify who's in front, behind, and beside him on that trip. So, you know, we are going to probably be asking parents if you can take your student to school, if that's a possibility for you, to partner with us and do that for this year, or at least for the interim, to help with the volume on our buses. We've been working on routes, quite honestly, with the current constraints. Our bus routes, we'd pick our first kid up at 5:50 in the morning, and that kid would be dropped off an hour before school starts, and I also have to figure out coverage for that time, which is not...
That's crazy.
No one should be on a bus at 5:50 in the morning. So those are some of the constraints that we're still trying to get above.
I know some school districts have made the option, taken the step to go to the state minimum, which means no busing for
high school or something.
12.
Yeah,
it's just high school. K-8 is required.
K-8 busing, but no high school.
Yeah, and K-8 could probably go out to 2 miles.
Yeah, 2 miles. So,
I'm not a fan if we can avoid that.
Ugly choices.
Yeah, and ugly choices picking your kid up at 5:50. I mean, we're going to try to do better, but the way our bus system runs, if you're not familiar, is middle school, high school run together, and then we go back out and pick up elementary and pre-K. So
it's
the
like
timing is
changing the times of the school day. Is that part of that conversation too? Then okay,
that
could potentially impact bus routes. Maybe
helpful. We just don't have too much flexibility because of the way the routes run.
Yeah,
because when one group's getting out, you know, we have to have buses available to come in.
Right.
So.
Unless there was more of a gap between the starts or something. You know, I mean, I guess I'm just saying, I don't know if that could help
you
or not.
You kind of catch yourself coming and going by the number. Because you can only have 12 or 24 on a bus.
Yeah.
If we were in our current situation, you're absolutely right. But our bus routes will take that much longer because you can only have 24 on a bus.
Right.
Instead of 48 or...
60, yeah.
So what we hope to learn soon is what those limitations are. I mean, we continue to wait for the governor and Ohio Department of Education to answer questions like, those possible limitations on class size, busing restrictions, what are the recommendations? Is it a 6-foot radius or is it a 10-foot radius? What's the recommendation with masks, hallways, all those types of issues? The one thing I can promise you, and this is what I said to parents today, that regardless of how all of this evolves, the one thing people can be positive is that we're still going to be here, and we're still going to wrap around your kid, and we're going to do right by your family, and we're going to do the best to provide a great education given whatever guidelines come out. We just need continued partnership, and you know, we're still going to be here at the end. So any questions for me?
You're going to update the 5-year forecast again? Yeah. No, thank you, Diane. It's just nice to see all those things, and it makes me feel confident that the right work is going on and the right mindset's out there, and you're including parents and staff and all the things that need to happen.
There's no doubt that we can't come up with the perfect plan, because it's not a perfect circumstance.
Right.
What we can do is do the best with the parameters we have and try to work through those kinks, and just need everyone to be patient and understanding like they were in the spring.
Flexible. Flexible's the hot word this year, right? Yeah.
And that's it for my list.
All right. Thank you. Todd, treasure report.
Mine will be brief. Diane kind of talked about, things we're waiting on the state for. Well, that also, we're also waiting on the state for information regarding the budget. So that's kind of the big unknown right now, what the fiscal year 21 budget will look like. They're about $2.5 billion behind on revenue projections, so it's pretty safe to say there'll probably be some cuts, but still no word what those would be. We're kind of working to control what we can control and what we do know. We do know that our fiscal year 20 state funding was cut by $1.03 million. And good news I can say is that we've offset that reduction in multiple ways. We made budget cuts of $375,000 for cuts for fiscal year 21. We just received a $168,000 rebate from the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. We received $298,000 of CARES funding, which is kind of a federal bailout type money. Those moves equate to, moves as well as just additional revenue equate to over. Forgot to mention was also savings. Savings from the shutdown was over $200,000. So those things equate to a number higher than $1.03 million. So we fully offset that number. I think it would be overly optimistic to think that we would be able to do that again, depending on what the fiscal 21 cut looks like. But, I think we've done a good thing in setting ourselves up the best way possible for, when that cut does come, so that we can handle it the best we can. So I thought that was great news. Yeah, that's really it for now.
Okay. Any questions, Todd?
Do you know anything about the timing of when there might be some numbers coming our way?
No, that's the big question. We do a bi-weekly treasurer's meeting, and we've got some people, an individual from ODE is on there, and he's, kind of saying that he's kind of pushing that, schools need to know, but, nobody knows.
Usually, hasn't it in the past, it's pretty much been the end of June that they were supposed to have it?
Right.
Okay.
Well, and then, it's not a new biennium. It should be already set. There shouldn't even need to have, but because the budget issues, it's just...
Yeah, they have to address that shortfall.
Yeah, they're going to have to address it.
Okay. All right. Okay, my report, I wanted to start out talking about The demonstrations and tie that into the town hall that I know at least Dick and I attended that yesterday, where they were talking about social injustices and really kind of talking about how can we as a public school district help to promote understanding and acceptance of all kinds of differences, you know, whether it be racial, religious, lifestyle, political, etc. I was gonna share that the chat box with you all, because there's a lot of resources on there that included some videos and some books to read, some things like that. But some of the takeaways that I had were, like one of the presenters there, they had a panel, and one of them said, I think you should start the school year asking these four questions of your students. How do you feel? What do you need? What is your hope for the future? What is your expectation for change or for racial justice? And I don't know that it would need to be specifically racial justice. I mean, it could be a variety of things. But anyways, we just kind of, I know we're not real diverse here in Marysville, but we do have some diversity, and there will be some kids that are coming to school traumatized, watching the demonstrations, and there will be staff that are traumatized. I mean, it's challenging for all of us. And so anyways, I just thought there were some really good points in there, and just a good reminder that you need to continue to have these conversations, and that as a public institution, as a public education facility, we have an important role, I think, to educate everybody.
If I can.
Yeah.
There were a couple of things that I heard in that online meeting, but also generally in some of the discussions in the meeting, and that is that the people in power have the ability to affect change.
Yes.
And so as a school board, as teachers in a classroom, you have the ability to address change. And our world is becoming, our country is becoming more diverse. It is a reality. And so even though we don't have a lot of diversity in our school district, our students are going to operate in a world that has a lot of diversity. Mm-hmm. And there were several that suggested that there needed to be very specific and intentional curriculums adopted to teach about racism and slavery and so forth, from the standpoint that you recognize that you are the problem, that, you know, when we use, because it was like the they statement creates separation. They do this, and they act this way, and they are like this, is a separating statement. And it's, you know, how am I reacting? How am I viewing other people? And it takes a lot longer to kind of work your mind around this, and it's not something that happens rather quickly. But you know, I thought it was one, I told you, I thought it was one of the best sessions that we've had.
They videotape these sessions too.
Yeah.
So if you go to OSBA website, they're available.
Yeah, I mean, the people that they had were really sharp and insightful. And it's perspective changing.
I'll share that chat information and just encourage people to read up on it and, you know, whatever.
I can tell you that, like, the kids I'm responsible for at home are teenagers, and it may seem like they're disconnected from the world, but they're very interested in these. They're very aware of what's happening. And I think talking about it in school would be a very, very positive thing.
Yeah, I think so too. Moving on to student achievement, We had some regional meetings for the student achievement liaisons where they, again, they stressed that need for flexibility and choice, so just exactly what we're doing. And then today, I thought I forwarded, but I don't think I did. So anyways, I sent you the thing called, the writing called A Look in the Rearview Mirror, which just highlighted the value of reviewing and reflecting on the past year before setting direction for the new year. And I think it was pretty obvious that's exactly what we're doing as a district, but I also challenged us as a board before we get ready to talk about our work plan for this coming school year to look through this process where you're actually thinking back in the year and writing down things that jump out at you as highlights and kind of reflecting on them and you know, just challenging us to come up with an effective work plan to best support our district as a school board. And then that reminder, OSBA town halls, they have them every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And they've also offered a summer leadership series to kind of take the place of the Board Leadership Institute that was canceled. And did you attend yesterday?
I did.
Okay. Okay. Was it worthwhile?
Mind-numbing.
Was it too much information? Or overwhelming? Or
no, it was Some people need to work on their presentations.
Gotcha.
I mean, the information was fine.
Right.
But when they're reading the
slides.
The slide one
right.
after the other.
Yeah.
And you sit there for 4 hours.
Right.
Now, there were a couple of sessions that were more lively.
Right. Well, that's when it's nice if you join without your video. And you can take a break every once in a while. Right?
Well, sometimes you need to have a beverage.
Okay. So there is the second series is this coming Tuesday, June 23rd from 1 to 5. And again, if you go to OSBA website, you can sign up. They're free. I guess another thing I wanted to talk about was our meeting format moving forward. I didn't know at some point do we want to try and move to a bigger room so that we could at least invite the media to come in if they wanted to, or if we, you know, let's say the task force, we wouldn't be able to have all 30, but we could potentially move to an auditorium or a gym in another building.
This order expires June 30th.
Okay.
That limits this.
Right, to 10.
So
we'll see what happens then.
Would you want to do it, wait and see?
Sure, yep,
and
we'll wait
and
see.
Keep talking to Jason about.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no problem moving somewhere larger
right.
and trying to spread out either.
Okay.
But I can check.
Okay.
With
so, I mean, this room is nice as far like the sound is good in here and the air and things like that. But okay, we'll just keep track of that. Let's see. We had a chamber meeting this morning, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau shared a 5-year strategic plan, and they really highlighted the need for hospitality workforce, I mean really kind of high-end hospitality workforce, and I felt like that it was kind of exciting to think about that as a potential opportunity for internships and for our students, like just kind of another career pathway for them. And the strategic plan is really impressive. They had a really excellent guy working with them, so yeah, I just thought that was kind of exciting. And then lastly, I would like to schedule a special meeting to take care of our end-of-year evaluations of Diane and Todd. And so two dates, and I'd like to do that before our July meeting. Our July meeting is the 16th. So I've thrown out a couple of dates, either Wednesday, July 8th or Monday, July 13th. And does anybody have any?
I am going to be gone the 8th,
okay.
But I will be back on the 13th.
Okay. So potentially Monday, July 13th would work for everybody?
Yes.
Okay, and so that would just be an executive session, mm-hmm. the entire meeting, to go over your evaluations, and we would do both of yours.
And where would that be here?
Yeah,
and what time?
Probably here. We can work on that. Is 5 o'clock a good time for everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll just plan on Monday the 13th at 5 p.m., and that's it for my report. So, legislative report.
hopefully all of you got my legislative report. House Bill 164 was passed, and it's the one that contains all the different changes looking toward next year. There were a number of very good things in the bill, and I won't go through all of those. I provided emails that address all that kind of stuff. There were also some shortcomings in that bill and some things left to work on, and those are mentioned in the emails also. I've been in communication through email with both Senator Burke and Representative Richardson on this. At the current time, the Senate is expected to meet next week for one day, and the only thing really that would impact schools would be to provide $300 million for school constructions, which doesn't really affect our district. I think it's important to note that both houses passed bills that would provide immunity from civil liability, but the chambers didn't get together. And so that issue is likely to not get looked at again until fall. But I think there's some positive support for that as it goes through. Monday I'm going to be on a conference call with Senator Brown, and Diane and Todd have given me the focus of my basic 2 minutes that I'm expecting to have to be able to say something. I did provide a note because I had really been pushing school bus safety and passing and cameras on buses and all this, and it didn't go anywhere. The day and Representative Richardson was kind enough to call me and kind of say, you know, there just wasn't enough support for that. The next day, I picked up the Columbus Dispatch and it said the House passed a. I've got it in here as a carry out margarita provision. They were able to pass a bill that allows you to buy beer and mixed drinks and take them home. So observation. Representative Richardson has done a marvelous job trying to raise awareness for that bill and so forth.
She's just one of many.
Yes, she's one of many, and the leadership
kind
of controls what they vote on, and they didn't vote on bus safety.
Can you, Dick, what's the civil liability immunity for what?
For COVID.
If a student comes to school and gets sick, and somebody's, Dave Burke called me and said, is liability an issue? Do you think somebody would sue you?
Yeah.
I said, anybody will sue us at any time over anything. And so, you know, protection against that. The bill, as it's written, applies to healthcare workers. So if they're providing healthcare to a person and that person dies, they are protected as long as they follow the recommended protocols and all that kind of stuff. So as long as we do things within the general guidelines and we don't do something that is careless or thoughtless, we would not be subject to liability. And that would be welcome relief.
Is that it?
That's it?
Thank you very much. We have a safety and drug committee report.
Yes. So our June 16th meeting was canceled, but they are working right now putting together a teen prevention leadership academy. Juniors and seniors can apply.
Oh, nice.
They will learn about substance abuse, prevention, community resources, and then they'll be challenged to create a capstone project. Okay. So kind of like how the posters were and stuff like that. So that's what's going on right now.
Okay.
And that's it.
Good. Okay. To the business part of our meeting, finally. I would accept a motion to approve our draft minutes from our May 21st regular meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any questions, edits, comments? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, I would accept a motion to approve the Treasurer CFO action items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Have any comments, Todd?
You'll see the fiscal year 21 appropriations are in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's compliance-wise, we have to approve those. The general fund appropriations are about $375,000 less than what was in the May five-year forecast. What the May five-year forecast was showing for fiscal year 21,
mm-hmm.
what we're approving is $375,000 less than that due to the budget cuts.
Okay.
Also, you would see there's several donations in there, mm-hmm. a very generous donation from the Memorial Hospital,
yeah.
As well as a couple of scholarship donations.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I know, and I noticed I had asked Todd about self-insurance because I know our self-insurance account is in pretty darn good shape, and I had asked about, like, remember when we had to transfer, we had to advance some monies and stuff, so keep your fingers crossed.
I'll give you a bigger update maybe next month.
Sorry, if something happens, it's my fault now.
Right now, the self-insurance fund looks better. It's better now at this point this year than it was at the same point last year. You know, at this same point last year, you know, we were in a deficit and having to basically borrow money from the general fund. So at this point this year, you know, we're looking it's probably end the year with a positive number. So that's good news. I'm holding off on repaying that advance until we get a little bit more of a reserve build up, because a positive number can disappear in a hurry, you know, with claims. And the second half of the year is always our... usually the higher claims come because people have hit their deductibles and those kinds of things. So, but at the same time, right now, definitely looks better than it did last year.
I think that's because people couldn't go.
Right, they couldn't go to the doctor. And they were taking care of themselves at home, right? Walking more and
Well, in general, you couldn't have elective surgeries or appointments were...
Exactly.
Yeah, televisits.
Yeah,
I'm afraid it might rebound pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, so at least we're starting in a better position, right? That's positive, yeah. Okay, how about a roll call?
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes, motion carries. Next item, I would accept a motion to approve Amber Powers for high school summer school staff for math.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith?
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Abstain.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, I would accept a motion to approve the superintendent action items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers?
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Anything you want to share?
Contract, the new positions that I talked about are on there. We have extended day contracts for staff, summer school, first read policies that you'll want to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any questions, you follow up with us. Student fees are on there. I did receive one question about student fees, about the increase of VMS. The Worldly Wise tool, it used to be a book that every student received. They moved to the online version, and that online version is actually more robust than the book and offers some assessments and potential to provide individual things, instruction through there. So it was an increase, I believe, of $1.50. Mm-hmm. And then the other increase there was novel expenses. So I think it went up about $5 and $4 at the other grade level. Mm-hmm. All other fees stayed the same, except if a new class was added. You may have noticed Fab Lab 2 was added at the high school. They didn't have that class before. That's the same fee price as Fab Lab 1. And Creek Views actually went down a little bit.
Yeah. And did you, I'm kind of going back to the policies, but did you have a question about something first? Okay.
No,
did you attended the policy committee meeting?
And,
okay.
And there was a lot of discussion in the policy meeting about some of the legal changes, temporary, all this, that, and the thing. And the word that we got from legal, I think, from legal counsel was really don't have to change our policies because it requires to come back in and change things again. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of different ending points, and it would be a bit cumbersome. So that was the advice there.
Yeah.
Most of the proposals here are driven by law, changes in the law, change some wording and so forth. So there's nothing that, at least from my standpoint, jumped out at me as being unusual. Mm-hmm. So, I just wanted to note that it's nice to see that we're adding teachers where teachers are needed based on increased enrollment or class sizes and so forth. We have one beginning teacher at Maven. Other teachers are coming to us with
5 years experience.
Four or five years of experience,
right.
Which means they should be ready to jump in and pick up the heavy load that's going to be here this fall.
Right.
Some are coming with more years, but due to our potential budget, we're hiring people at five.
Okay.
So I feel like we really had a good talent pool this summer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really nice
to see. I know we have some teachers that are moving to different jobs, and wish them well.
Yeah.
And we will miss them. The services
definitely
they provided to our school and
teachers and other staff.
Audible.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? No? Okay. Then roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Now we are to the comments and questions before we go into our executive session. So, Mr. Smith?
It's great to see everybody. It's nice to be here in person. And I hope all of you and all your families are safe. I can't tell you how proud I am of what our teachers, staff, and administrators did this past spring. The surveys that we have, I think, are reflective of the concerted effort on everybody's part. Obviously, when you're thrown something that you weren't prepared for, there are going to be places and ways that you can do things better. And I know that the surveys that we've gotten, the input from the community has been very valuable. And the presentations tonight show that the input from the community is driving the decisions that are being made by the district. Mm-hmm. I think that is evident. Mm-hmm. It should be evident to everyone. Mm-hmm. Good luck to Diane and to you, Todd, and completing your jobs, because tomorrow could bring
entirely different situation. And I hope both of you will be able to get good night's sleep and not wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning after going to bed at midnight.
Right. Okay.
I'd like to say I truly appreciate all the work that the teachers and staff did during the shutdown period. It was definitely turning on a dime. We did learn a lot of lessons, and we really, really have a lot of work ahead of us for everyone involved. I want to say thank you to Steve Griffin again one more time. I felt that his material was extremely critical. The fact that the backslide is not going to be just normal backslide. There's going to be significant loss. So how do we engage with the parents, not only with the teachers, but also with the parents? Because at some point, the parents have to be responsible for their child's education as well as the teachers. So that's kind of another challenge for our community, but our community always steps up. So I'm sure they will again this time. Wanted to say thank you to Mark Gallagher for the social-emotional learning. There's been so much good activity that happened last year and unfortunately cut a little bit short, but specifically the trauma-informed training that Sarah Buffy, I believe, did. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot of really positive comments about that, and you know, from what I heard, the teachers wanted to even learn more, you know, get to the next step on that. So I'm happy to hear that we were able to intervene and thwart some potential mental health crises. Mm-hmm. That's what this activity is all about, and it's really very, very critical. And my last thing is, I was touched by the statement that the district along in Union County, along with the other districts, did, but I was even more touched by the personal comments that people from this community posted on social media. Former students posted things that kind of broke my heart about the way that they were treated when they were here in the district. Maybe a little sad. Maybe we all need to do a little bit better. So, that's it.
I just want to say thank you for all the leadership and what you guys are doing, and keeping the entire staff, everybody being flexible and having every scenario marked out. I just want to say thanks.
Yeah, there was a lot of information tonight, but mm-hmm. my overall feeling is good. I feel reassured that we have the right people in the right place, and I'm talking mm-hmm. about a superintendent and a treasurer and the administrators who presented tonight. This is a big job ahead of us to do better in the fall than we did in the spring when we didn't know what was coming. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're on the right track, and that's because of the staff that we have. Mm-hmm. I think this health thing came out of nowhere, mm-hmm. but with all the changes that it's forcing on us, our values haven't changed, our mission hasn't changed, our priorities haven't changed, mm-hmm. and the talent that we have here has not changed, and that's going to carry us through. So I feel really good after what we did tonight. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Todd, any comments?
Nothing
bad.
Okay. I think
I've
given enough tonight.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Well, and I just wanted to, again, congratulate all of our Good Apple Award winners, and really just kind of like taken from what you've said, after watching everything tonight and listening, it reminded me how we're really well positioned both financially and academically, and I mean, I can't imagine being in a better position in an awful situation like this, you know. I mean, it's just nice to have a strong financial background and to have this leadership team in place, and to already have that strategy and already have been working on personalized learning and choice and mastery, competency-based, all those kinds of things that I think everything that we've been through have highlighted the importance of that kind of a mindset. So I really appreciate that. And I also want to say happy Father's Day this weekend to our fathers here. Your kids are lucky to have you. And with that, I think I would accept a motion to go into executive session, and we'll be adjourning the meeting after the executive session with no action taken. So just to let people know that. And so I'd accept the motion to go into executive session to consider the compensation of a public employee.
So
moved. Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion.